They said, if you won't institute racism in your communities, we will. And let no conservative ever complain again about a liberal activist court. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. After 6 months of negotiations, Southern California supermarket workers with Vons, Albertsons, and Ralph's stores say they are tired of waiting. Since March 5th, the region's 65,000 supermarket employees have worked without a contract. Although they say they don't prefer it, they say they are willing to strike if they do not sign a new contract soon. Leilani Albano has more on the story.
After months at the negotiating table, grocery workers earlier this month threatened to walk out of labor talks for good. Michael Strader is president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 1442, in Santa Monica.
Clearly, enough time has elapsed for the parties to reach an agreement. However, the employers are playing hardball with the union negotiators.
But after a war of words, both parties are back to labor talks and announced last week they are edging closer to an agreement. In the meantime, the union is making preparations for a work stoppage, just in case. So far, they have collected 100,000 pounds of grocery for the workers' food fund and raised millions of dollars in strike money, says Chris Zazueta, a 20-year Ralph's worker.
I could only hope that the corporate CEOs have the common sense to come to the table with something that's fair and equitable for all employees.
For an extended version of that story, visit laborradio.org. Iraqi workers are protesting a proposed new oil law. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions is leading protests demanding that the Iraqi parliament reject the proposed new oil law. The union says the law surrenders Iraqi sovereignty to multinational oil companies. According to the union, under the proposed law, Iraq will lose control of its oil. The Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions says that will lead to social progress being curtailed. The Federation is calling for complete withdrawal of all foreign troops from Iraq. The Federation called a strike in the oil fields June 4th, and it says it's prepared to strike again to defend Iraq's nationalized oil system. Iraqi oil resources have been in the public sector since the 1970s. The proposed new oil law, essentially drafted by the United States on behalf of multinational oil companies, opens up two-thirds of Iraqi oil to foreign control. Passage of the law is one of the conditions imposed on Iraq by the U.S.
Here is today's economic report. A new study finds that America, once the tallest population in the country, has been losing ground. Since World War II, Americans have fallen behind the rest of the world when it comes to height, and some economists believe that could be bad news. According to the Associated Press, economists suggest that height is a good measure of a population's well-being. Tall people are healthier, wealthier, and live longer. A shorter population is an indication that children aren't getting the care they need. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes after the hour, and we've made it to the middle of the week. It's the most special evening of the week here on Head On. You know what that means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right. Place your hands upon your computer speakers and feel, I tell you, feel the power rolling through you. It's prayer meeting edition. I am Brother Bob. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and you are welcome at the altar. Now, rather than me blathering on and setting up the rest of the program right now, I would far rather do something that I've been rather excited about since last week. On the phone with us right now is Crystal Zevon, the ex-wife of Warren Zevon, and more importantly at this juncture, the author of I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, The Dirty Life and Times of Warren Zevon, available as of yesterday from Echo Books, an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers. Ms. Zevon, are you there?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, Crystal?
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much, first of all, for taking time to join us. I know you're very, very busy with the book just coming out and all. Let me just start out by thanking you for your effort in doing this. For those of us who were fans of your late ex-husband's work, I just finished the book yesterday, and the acknowledgments that you put that you list at the end show what a tremendous effort it was. How hard was it to bring so many people together to put this biography together?
Well, it was actually probably easier than I thought it might be. I could have gone on endlessly interviewing people. Everyone I talked to, almost everyone I tried to reach was more than willing to talk. And you know, of course, there you would then say, oh, you've got to talk to so-and-so. So at some point, finally, I just had to say, okay, I've got to stop here. And, you know, then a few more would come in, but I had to make a judicious choice about, I wanted the celebrities, but I also wanted the roadies and the girlfriends and the family to kind of give the whole picture.
And what amazed me is that so many people were so forthcoming about aspects of Warren's life that one would have expected not so much candor. Is that because of a previous request on Warren's part? Was it a permission matter?
I think that probably had something to do with it. He asked me to do this, and he wanted the whole truth told. So I think people responded to that. And you know, Warren and I had a relationship. We hadn't been married for 20 some years, but people knew us together. He called me wifey. So I think that also lent some credibility to it. And I also think, you know, when you lose someone, you need to talk. So I think there was a sort of a camaraderie and a catharsis going on with all of it.
Well, from Carl Hiaasen to Dave Barry to Stephen King, Jackson Brown, this book, apart from the story of Warren's life that it is, it's also sort of a who's who of the culture, and it shows I think how pervasive in certain circles Warren's work became, because it's literary as well as musical, and the cultural references in there you can see the times themselves change. As you lived it, and as Warren lived it, and the other people in the book, how much of this also, as far as your own judgment is concerned, does turn out to be a time capsule?
Oh boy, I don't know. That's a new question.
Well, I'm sorry. I can. I've got. I ask these long, 9 million word questions. I'm thinking back to another rock and roll bio I read many years ago, and that's the Jim Morrison bio, No One Here Gets Out Alive. And that's what I kept, it was sort of like the benchmark that I kept coming back to with this, Crystal, because I think the so-called rock and roll lifestyle in many ways can be more prosaic than we expect, can't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
This is...
Tell us on that prosaic side of thing. You know, the people who listen to this program, a lot of them are very well familiar with Warren's work, and you know the music and but the side of his life that no one saw, the quirkiness. Was it really obsessive compulsive disorder? I mean, it shows up in the book quite a bit. Was it ever actually diagnosed?
You know, I don't think it was ever diagnosed by a licensed diagnostician, but I think, you know, I look back to when we were married and, you know, there was no such diagnosis. So Warren would have these odd habits. I mean, very early on in our relationship, and I think it's in the book where he had avoided the draft. And there was some part of him that felt guilty, you know, that guys went over to Vietnam and died, and, you know, he got a shrink to say he was gay. and so he didn't have to go. And there was a part of him that felt guilty about that. He was named after an uncle on his mother's side named Warren, who died in Korea. So it was, you know, this was always held up to him, this heroic uncle, and so he couldn't drive past a billboard or a picture of Uncle Sam or any recruiting thing, any military thing, actually. He had a thing where he'd have to turn around and drive around the block and drive back the other way, and, you know, some formula that took the spell away. And, you know, I mean, I just thought he was, you know, nuts or
eccentric,
testing me or who knows what.
Yeah.
But in fact, particularly when he stopped drinking, these ritual things got more and more pervasive, and you know, I think it probably was real. I know that people question it. You know, I don't know if it was real or just a way that he got attention or tried to identify himself. But I don't think Warren did that.
It was really fundamental to the organic operation of his brain. You know, it seems like Johnny Cash is often referred to as the man in black. You could just as easily have subtitled this man in gray.
Yeah.
How many? And I don't want to give away the book, but how many gray T-shirts did Warren own?
Well, probably hundreds.
And
I mean, we all have some.
it just amazed me as I went through it.
Yeah, I told the publisher they should really get together with Calvin Klein and, you know, do a whole promotional thing.
Yeah, because it wasn't just any gray T-shirt; it was Calvin Klein gray T-shirt.
Yes,
that's just I don't know. It struck me as so, you know, we say eccentric, we say quirky, you know, tortured genius. It's also so incredibly human. If I could shift gears with you for just a moment, Crystal, you know, you mentioned his drinking, and that's, of course, seems almost axiomatic within show business, be it rock and roll music, country music, literature, whatever. What's described in the book is such a profound level of abuse. How did he manage to stay sober for 17 years?
You know, it with great difficulty, and that's really true. I mean, once he stopped drinking, he went on the road, but, you know, he would go out. He went back to his hotel room. He stayed in his apartment. He lived in a one bedroom apartment on the flats in West Hollywood. He was a creature of habit. He went to the same restaurants every day. He used the same dry cleaner, the same mechanics, and, you know, the people in those locales would become his friends. You know, that's who he talked to or how he socialized. But he had these patterns and habits, and he needed to stay within those. And, you know, that's kind of how, I mean, that's that OCD thing, is needing a kind of control.
Now, with all the alcohol abuse and some limited drug abuse mentioned in there, this doesn't come across, though, as a cautionary tale. Did Warren have any element of wanting to reach out or warn people away, or, you know, don't do like I did?
You know, I mean, he probably did to a certain degree. I mean, certainly he was there for me when I was in trouble. Or, you know, if someone reached out to him. But he also, Warren didn't proselytize, you know. He wouldn't talk about politics. There's a passage in there where he had a girlfriend who was a professor at election time, and he said, "I don't vote." Now, he voted when we were together, because I'm very political. Mm-hmm. So I kind of pushed that stuff. But, you know, later as he got older, he said, "I don't have the right to vote." It was a part of that torment or whatever it was that believed there was something wrong. He was the most literate guy I know. My daughter inherited all of his books, and it's floor to ceiling books now in her house, as it was in his place.
And it's everything from psychology to pulp murder mysteries to musical theory.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sitting here. I can look at the shelf right now. Shostakovich, A Life Remembered, Addiction to Perfection. What's it? Whatever that means. Rilke. You just go on and on. But in all these books, and it didn't strike me until fairly recently, there are no political books. Kierkegaard, postmodernism, Mick Jagger's biography, there's all of that, but nothing political.
I think that's one of the reasons I've enjoyed the book so much, Crystal, is because part and parcel of what I do here, I'm reading, four or five books at a time, and they're usually, George Bush is a pimple on the world's butt and how to lance it.
Right.
And to take a step back from that and read this incredibly honest examination of a life took my mind in a completely different direction. But you mentioned Vietnam a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Was his desire not to go in the draft, was that a function of opposition to what was going on there? You say, wasn't that political, or was that just, I don't want to go?
I think it was both. I mean, yes, I think he absolutely opposed the war, but again, he didn't go out and protest. He was also just scared to go.
But it seems like for such an apolitical guy, he had a very warm friendship with Steve Cohen down in Tennessee.
Absolutely.
And to hang out with the likes of Hunter Thompson, who, my God, the man's veins were full of politics.
Yeah.
You sit down and you listen to, like I'm telling you. But to listen to something like Disorder in the House, there's no getting around the politics of that song.
Yes. But he co-wrote that with Jorge.
Right.
That's what I mean. I mean, Warren didn't have the kind of mind that would just shut it off. So it was in there. It was in there in his way. But he considered himself an entertainer. He loved Sammy Davis Jr.,
Oh, that one joke in there. Oh, my God. Yeah. Because I laughed out loud when I read it, and I felt ashamed of myself for it.
Oh, I know.
But there's a journal entry from September 21, 1998, where he refers to the awful spectacle of Clinton's testimony. It's farce, but it's not Rwanda either. Obviously, he was paying attention to the world around it.
Well, and Steve Cohen, I don't remember if they cut this. They cut a lot of Steve's stuff out of there. Unfortunately, but Steve talked about how he learned things about what was going on in the world or in other countries or in administrations elsewhere from Warren. So he knew about stuff. He just felt like it wasn't his job or his place to voice an opinion.
What about the creative process, Crystal? Because that's got to be at the end of the day, a study of Warren Zevon is a study of the creative process. How did his topicality, the way he used the English language is so varied and so broad? Is there any way of understanding how he harnessed that?
I think he had, it depended on what it was. He has songs, the songs he's most well known for were written in 15 minutes. They just, London, Excitable Boy, you know, Lawyers, Guns, and Money, an inspiration and written on a cocktail napkin, or in a room with the guys, you know, whatever it was. But songs like Frank and Jesse James or Veracruz or, you know, songs that he loved history. And so he would research, you know, a topic and then find some kind of skewed way to report on that topic in song. And then there were others that, he would get stuck on a phrase or a word. He loved the syllables of words. He loved L's. He loved the word gorilla. stuff like that. I mean, if we'd had a boy, he wanted to name him Llewellyn. Which I didn't. For example, this new Preludes album that has just come out, a CD that's just come out, I guess you don't think that song anymore. There's an early version of what later became two songs, became Accidentally Like a Martyr and Empty Handed Heart. And it started with a phrase, should have done, that's my song. And he went for years, you know, muttering that phrase. And then things would happen in life. He would experience something and, you know, another line would come. And, you know, it changed many times over the years. And the songs, Desperados Under the Eaves, that's, you know, some of those songs are very autobiographical, have to do with life experience, but they also have this connection with language, you know, married with the music, you know, and it would, mm-hmm. they'd be years in coming.
It's amazing. It's amazing to contemplate how he even held on to that. I mean, was there a notebook? I mean, some writers keep a morgue of sorts. You know, something grabs your brain and you write it down and years later come back to it. Was that how that process worked, or was it all just swirling in his mind?
Well, I think it was both. But yes, he wrote things down. He had music manuscript paper wherever he went. So, you know, whether it was the, you know, did the notes or the words come first? That's an impossible thing to say with Warren.
It's the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, turning to in a different direction. This bio, and I mean no disrespect whatsoever, this bio, the way it's structured, can't help but also be a biography, an autobiography of you, and to a certain extent, a biography of your lovely daughter Ariel, and of Warren's son Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
How has it impacted, you know, going back and looking and exposing that, how has that impacted you and Jordan and Ariel?
You know, it's been difficult. You know, I spent these years with the interviews and reading all of his journals. And, yeah, it's been hard. I don't think either Ariel or Jordan have read the whole book. They've read bits and pieces of it.
Because, frankly, with both of them, there were the portions of the book that I got through. My wife and I have four children, and if you try to put yourself into someone's shoes at all, which I think a good book demands that we do, mm-hmm. it was mentally, spiritually painful.
Yes.
To read, especially Ariel's portions, does this book for you serve, or for her? I wouldn't ask you to speak for her. Is there a cathartic quality, or a therapeutic quality, or a cautionary quality to it?
Well, for me, there certainly is. For Ariel, I think she, you know, Warren wasn't there for her for a lot of her life, and nor for Jordan. I think the two, as siblings, they got to know each other through Warren's death. He didn't do much to bring them together, but I think, you know, the good thing that happened was we all got to know each other in a new way after he died. I mean, Ariel and Jordan knew two different guys. Ariel went to college and, you know, read the same kinds of books that Warren read, and she was involved in theater and so on, and so they related on that level, and, you know, they listened to classical music. She played the flute, and And Jordan knew rock and roll, and you know, they related on more of the pop culture issues. And, you know, after he died, I remember her coming back from Forest Lawn when they, you know, went to whatever, make the arrangements for the cremation, and, you know, coming back, and both of them just saying, you know, it's like we knew two different dads. You know, and they came together at times, but, so in a way, Jordan's been back here with his new wife twice. We all went out there for his wedding. Jody and Jordan came to Portugal when Ariel and Ben got married. So it's, you know, and this has all happened, even also with the Zevon family. Warren never brought everybody together. We've gone down to the Cape to their home, Warren's cousins, several times since Warren died. So it's an interesting thing. It brought a lot of people together.
And it's almost contrary to what one might expect. Let me ask, if I may, a little bit. You continue to be very socially and politically active, and Ariel has started this project in Vermont, because we pay on this network and on this program, we pay a lot of attention to that kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about LACE, would you?
Oh, sure. It's a Ariel, let me preface it, but Ariel was in L.A. Acting, and when she had children, she vowed to get out of L.A. She wasn't going to bring her children up there. She's always been interested in agriculture and farming, and thought, you know, even if she had had success in acting, that she would end up on a farm. So she came to Vermont thinking they were going to find a farm. But they found a great house in this little town in Vermont, this town that's kind of been Walmartized, if you will. The downtown has a lot of empty storefronts and now pawn shops and, you know, a strip club, just the main street. And but she fell in love with it. We live in this little neighborhood with, you know, kids playing in the street, and it's, you know, for someone from L.A., it's a little piece of paradise. And she started getting into women being in agriculture, starting businesses, and then she saw a for rent sign downtown, and she said, what if we did something? Because she started trying to feed her kids farm fresh foods, and nobody seemed to know where to get them. In this town, there's no market conveniently located.
And that runs against the paradigm of what the rest of us expect Vermont to be.
Exactly. I mean, it's Vermont has more farmers per capita than any state in the United States, and yet you can't find farm fresh products. I mean, you know, there are farmers markets once a week, and there are, you know, I mean, there are some that you can't find them, but you really have to go out of your way. And most people don't. So they drive the 5 miles up to, you know, the supermarket on the hill, and, you know, to buy food that was carted 1,500 miles to get to your dinner table.
Right.
So she just started to do something about it. So she formed LACE, which stands for Local Agricultural Community Exchange, with the idea of opening a sort of year-round farmer's market with a cafe that serves only locally grown foods and seasonal, you know, there will be seasonal menus depending on what's available. And a cooking, you know, a classes, educational stuff so that you can get people in and teach them about preserving and drying and freezing and, you know, how you can...
Canning and...
Exactly. There's a children's center. There'll be kids coming from, you know, and the idea... we're in a poor blue-collar community here, but to get some of these people who are out of work or who, you know, whose kids grow up in fast foods to find a new way...
That is beautiful, Crystal. It's of course by design it has to be sustainable,
right?
Is this something that you all hope will see? You hope to see it expand and grow out of the area, or is it just localized and, you know,
well,
hope for the best?
Whether it expands and grows out of the area or not remains to be seen. But we hope it'll be a model. And already we're seeing other. Jackson Brown is coming in to do two concerts. He's Ariel's godfather, and he.
Oh wow.
you know, he's done so much for so many, but we're really lucky. This little town has a beautiful opera house, 650-seat opera house. And, you know, the town never saw anything like it before. So he's doing, and the first concert sold out in 10 minutes. So he agreed to do another one. And, you know, which is really helping us because we're renovating an old department store, one of those family department stores that had been there for 125 years and just went out of business. You know, we're using the drawers, we're taking them apart and using the wood to, you know, everything's recycled. We had just had a volunteer weekend, and people from, like, you've got a homeless guy standing next to the, excuse me, but right-wing mayor.
Yeah, there are those in this world, and we can't do anything about it.
But they were, all, everybody, you know, the church ladies standing next to the, you know, punk rockers, and, you know.
Well, that's community building, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it's if there's some level of common ground where people can come together, then maybe we can stitch up some of the rifts that are splitting this country asunder.
Exactly. It was so exciting, I can't tell you.
And what about your work? What are you actively involved in these days?
Well, I mean,
or what not?
I
don't know which is the shorter list.
No, I'm working with LACE. I've been a media activist for many years, but I've kind of retired from it as a profession. You know, I've worked a lot with Jeff Cohen, who started Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting.
And it's so ironic because the show that precedes this one, our good friend Mark Levine hosts it, and he just had Steve Rendell from Fair,
right,
on for the hour there, and I thought I remembered seeing Fair on your on the list of things you had done. Does the future of Warren's music play into any of the things that you're doing here?
Well, you know, I mean, my hope in doing this is to get a wider listenership. You know, Warren, never had the respect and acclaim that he deserved. So I would hope, and I think young people today might get him in a way that, you know, was more limited back in the 70s and 80s.
And in fact, the release of the book, you mentioned the one disc that's been released. There's also been a re-release of three other of Warren's,
yes,
titles, has there not?
Yeah. Stand in the Fire, I think, is one of the finest live albums ever done, and it was never released on CD, so it is now out on CD. And The Envoy, which is also, now there's a political album.
Yeah.
And it was also never on CD. And then it was, I think, the 25th anniversary of Excitable Boy, so they re-released Excitable Boy, remastered.
Now, with a lot of artists, and I assume you would be in a position probably as good or better than anyone to tell this, and with a lot of artists, you'll find out after they pass on 2 years later that, there were 900 hours of studio stuff that was never released.
Yeah.
Is that something, is there unreleased material out there that, because there was a reference in the book to Warren profoundly objecting to so-called bonus tracks.
Yeah.
Is there still stuff out there that might come on the market at some point?
Absolutely.
I would love to hear it. I've spent the last few days just sort of dredging up all of my Warren music and going over and just reappreciating it. And to have something fresh and new out there that I can't tell you what it would mean.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful.
Well, you know, I mean, Jordan came across these cases of, I think, 125 or 27 tapes of stuff. Because Warren would tape stuff as he was writing over and over, you know, different versions and different, and keep it all. He kept it all. So it's all out there. You know, I also have a hope that someday people will run across the, at least the transcripts, the musical transcripts of his classical stuff. I know he recorded a lot of that too on synthesizer, and I don't know whether that's among the stuff that Jordan found or not, but you know, that was his beginnings were classical.
What, 12 years old and going to visit Shostakovich?
Stravinsky,
I'm sorry.
Yes,
Stravinsky.
Right.
What... that's one of the things. You read this stuff and you go, you can't help but just be amazed by the way a life synthesizes itself.
Yeah.
So that would be beautiful to run across. And the passage in the book toward the end of his life where they're recording and somebody says, we need more bar room. And he said, well, I won't give you that. I don't do bar room.
Yeah.
And then played the track in classical fashion.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful to hear that stuff.
Yeah.
Crystal, I thank you so very much. I hope I haven't taken up too much of your time. I was just, it's such an exciting, wonderful book. And it's hard to, wonderful. Yeah, it is. It's a tremendous book. And I applaud you for your effort in putting it together, and everyone who participated with you, because it had to be a journey down some dark roads. What did Jorge say? Warren traveled down his own road, and it was unpaved.
Yes, exactly.
and you sort of had to go down that road with him for a while, just to put this all back together. Thank you again for so much for adding to the lexicon and adding to the wealth of information that is out there. One last question, what kind of a response are you getting so far? Have you seen any advance notice or the critics being good to you?
So far, it's looking really good.
Wonderful.
I'm overwhelmed. And I thank you, by the way, for all that you do.
Well, we appreciate it very much.
I'm honored to be on your show.
It's a thrill, and if there's an update or anything else comes out, I hope you'll come and come back and share it with us.
Absolutely.
And best of luck with the concerts. Boy, I tell you what, it'd be wonderful to be in Vermont in a couple of weeks. That's going to be wonderful, and please pass our heartfelt hopes for the LACE effort along, because there's not just a power grid out there that we need to get off of. There's an industrial food grid,
yeah.
And that's how it starts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, have a wonderful, wonderful evening, and the best of luck as you continue what you're doing, Crystal.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Okay, again, I'll say what I always say. If a book makes it onto this program, the book makes it onto this program because I approve of the book. Because I think there's value and worth in the book, and something to be learned and something to be had by owning the book. It is just out. I mean, yesterday was the release date on Echo Books, ECCO Books, an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers. I would guess that there is a link to the book up at the website. If I know our news ninjas like I think I know our news ninjas. Crystal Zevon, I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, The Dirty Life and Times of Warren Zevon. It's funny, it's heartbreaking, and it's just so damn real. It's everybody associated, and of course, as she said, I'm sure this could be, as it stands, what is it, about a 450-page book. This could be a 900-page book, and I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that got left on the floor, maybe enough for another tome at some point. But get yourself acquainted with this. Get yourself reacquainted with Warren Zevon's music, because for someone who was as apolitical as he claimed to be, this is our kind of music. Start to finish, whether it's pop or whether it's whether it was the stuff he was writing poppy in 15 minutes or so, or whether it's the more introspective, dark stuff. This is just great music. We'll take a break. Hey, Agnes, let's listen to a Warren song. Got something queued up there? Cool. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. From 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee-deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson.
the Thompson gunner. His comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest. But of all the Thompson gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. That son of a bitch, Van Owen, blew off Roland's head. Flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. Roland searched the continent for the man who'd done him in. He found him in Mombasa in a barroom drinking gin. Thompson gun, he didn't say a word, but he blew out of one's body from there to Johannesburg. Rolling the headless Thompson gunner. Now it's 10 years later, but it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The following is a Head-On Radio Network special announcement. Ha ha, I'm back! That's right, the rampaging, ranting, tree-hugging, planet-saving, head-banging hippie is back at a brand new time. Foxed Up returns weekdays 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and late night 1 a.m. in Sydney. So set your streamer to a new Foxed Up time here on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I love the cross currents in music. That line, "I'll sleep when I'm dead." You want to get about as far away from maybe Warren Zevon's work as you could possibly get and still be listening to music. There's a line from a Jimmy Buffett tune called "I'm Growing Older But Not Up," where he sings, I'd rather die while I'm living than live while I'm dead. Same thing. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who love Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner, if you want to find out how that song came to be, it's in the book. The people who loved Warren Zevon's music are a devoted bunch, and there's a lot of stuff that's laid out for everyone to see as far as how his music came into being. Wow. This thing arrived on Friday, and like I said, I finished it last night. And I put the other five books that I've got going right now down to do this one. Because we're a literate bunch. We horn people, whether it's me or the folks who share their time and their ideas with us. And we read the news, and we read the commentary, and we read this website and that website. Sometimes you step back, and it's cleansing to read something else. Because for all the hard work that goes into these books, we know that George Bush is a pimple on the world's ass. We understand that completely, thoroughly, and absolutely, probably as much or more than anyone else on planet Earth. But to step back and see something like this, read something like this, is absolutely mind-boggling. And the thing is, sooner or later, it is political too. Because if art isn't political, and if art isn't cultural, and if art isn't social, it ain't art. Or at least that's the way I look at it. But after all, one other thing to bring up, and we'll probably take it on into the top of the hour from this. The lace venture there in Vermont, and trying to get farm fresh foods, reminded me of a story that I've had sitting around for a while. This from the Progressive, an article by Elizabeth Di Novella, simply titled "Franken Foods on the Dinner Table." When you get into the mindset of, that sounds like a Warren Zevon song too, "Franken Foods on the Dinner Table." It's even got a nice little scansion to it. But Ms. Di Novella asks, ready-to-eat cloned beef? The Food and Drug Administration, and bear in mind, this is not an old story. This is a week-old story. The Food and Drug Administration is on the verge of approving food from cloned animals to be sold in grocery stores. I don't know, is John Fox in the chat room? Because if John's in the chat room, John is in mid-hissy right now. Nope, no John. On the verge of approving food from cloned animals to be sold in grocery stores, these products would not have to carry an identifying label. You know, as somebody who has been told recently by a member of the medical profession to get serious about paying attention to the food that goes into his body, that would be me, I'm a label freak. I read labels. Like I said, I was having the evening cocktail not too long back, and went to pour my tonic water. It's spring, yeah. Went to pour my tonic water. Being spring, you want to make sure that the mosquitoes can't get you. So sort of advanced medication. Being it's got quinine in it, advanced medication against malaria. But, there it was. The high fructose corn sweetener in tonic water. It's tonic water! But at least you can read that on the label. Label after label after label. High fructose corn sweetener, corn syrup solids, the partially hydrogenated yada, 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 fully hydrogenated palm and soybean kernel nut oils. But you can read that. Now, meanwhile, and the folks over at WalmartWatch.com have been most assiduous in trying to point out this effort going on right now. Walmart is busting hump to oppose something called COOL, C-O-O-L, Country of Origin Labeling. Walmart does, and it pertains to meat. Walmart doesn't want you to know where it gets its meat. On the ironic side of things, given the whole Chinese poison in the hog food supply story that came up last week, it might be the United States that they don't want to tell you is where the meat's coming from, but not likely. But it's been years now that years ago I was in Wally World and picked up a package of hamburger and it said ground beef with beef flavor added. It was then that I found out that adding water to beef to increase the weight constitutes beef flavor. As long as you dissolve one cube of bouillon in 800 gallons of water. And now they don't even want to tell you where the meat came from. They're busting their humps to get, and that's part and parcel of this the Franken beef. Arr, labeling bad. Arr. The FDA is set to, you know, does that make your eyes just, you know how your eyes will kind of get a little sort of a loosey goosey feeling to them, and like they're going to just kind of roll back in the head, and you're going to go. Boom. Does this give you one of those? The FDA. Because, after all, the FDA is, you know, since it's involved with the Bush part of the Bush administration, the FDA is therefore, by definition, run by some shill from the one lobby or another who came in and said, labels? We don't need no stinking labels. What do they want to know if it's cloned for? That's why it's cloned. It's all the damn same. Makes no sense to label cloned beef. Clone 1's the same as clone 2's, the same as clone 3, is the same as clone generation 4. That's the problem. It isn't. Because it's the same principle that applies to, Xerox copies. You start off with the clean copy, you copy it once, you copy the copy, you copy the copy of the copy, you copy the copy of the copy of the copy. And quality goes down, 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 down. Anybody that's ever worked in any kind of audio understands that back in the bad old days of magnetic tape, if you copied once, first generation copy, okay. But you lose a little more on the second generation copy, and you lose a little more on the third, and on the fourth, and on the fifth, on all these analog recordings. Well, guess what? Cows are analogs. They ain't digital. And so weird things will begin to happen from generation 2 to generation 3 down to generation 17, not least among which is the fact that the food supply will be put in profound, profound jeopardy. According to its draft, Lord, you know, does it just, we've got a government that spends your money putting these out. Draft Animal Cloning Risk Assessment. The, what would we call that? The DACRA, the Draft Animal Cloning Risk Assessment. The FDA says meat and other products from cloned animals are as safe to eat as other food, which in fact it might be, because the other food is pretty well, damn well poisoned by now, too. I mean, it's a lie, but it's not a lie. You know, consumer groups. Because that's how they think it. Yeah, consumer groups. They say that there's not enough that enough research into the possible risks of human consumption of cloned beef hasn't been done. Enough? How about any? Throw it on the grill there, Bobby. I want mine medium rare. Tastes like cow to me. Safe! Meanwhile, according to the Washington Post, the FDA, quote, has known for years about contamination problems at a Georgia peanut butter plant and on California spinach farms that led to disease outbreaks that killed three people. But because we are, it's involved in, it's part of a Republican administration, they were going to rely on the free market. Going to rely on the capitalist system to allow the producers to police themselves, because, you know, that's how you do best. When, yeah. Put that in another context. How about the FBI has decided to allow terrorists to police themselves? Or the New York Police Department has declared that burglars should be allowed to police themselves. Because, see, burglars aren't burglars until they get caught burgling. Up until then, they're just another innocent until presumed innocent, innocent until proven guilty citizen. So a corporate polluter, a corporate poisoner, is not a poisoner or a polluter until they get caught. And as long as they're policing themselves, guess what? You're not going to get caught. And you're going to sit down to your little spinach salad that has been rinsed in caca, and you're going to wonder, you're going to start wondering, my, that's kind of odd. I'm bleeding where I ought not be. And the next thing you know, you've got yourself a healthy little case of poisoning via E. coli 157H7. And then you're screwed. Same with peanut butter. How does peanut butter get E. coli 157H7 on it? Do you know where E. coli 157H7 lives? Here's a hint. It doesn't live on nice, shiny laboratory countertops. Here's a bigger hint. Out on the factory farms of Kansas and Nebraska, cattle stand fetlock deep. Is that a word, fetlock? In the stuff that is a breeding ground for E. coli 157H7. That's right. Poopy! Peanut butter gets E. coli 157H7 because it's been exposed to poop! Same thing with spinach. Poop! Same thing with hamburgers. Poop! That's where it comes from. It's just a little, E. coli 157H7 condominium poop. But you see, the free market guarantees that producers will police themselves because they are honest and would not say poop if they had a mouthful. Obviously, they didn't say poop, and they did have a mouthful. See? It works. All right, news time. We'll be back. Hey, light it up. E. coli 157H7. That's the phone number. E. coli 157H7. Nah, it's 877-443-2366. Or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones hit another record today, closing over 13,200. We'll have the details and numbers coming up in our business segment. Congress failed to override President Bush's veto of the war spending bill today. The bill called for a timetable for troop withdrawal from Iraq. Democrats did not have the two-thirds majority needed for that override. A day after President Bush vetoed that war spending bill, he's meeting with a bipartisan group of congressional leaders to work on a new solution. About 4,000 American troops will be deployed in Iraq this week as part of the troop surge. The aim of the increased troops is to help quell the sectarian violence raging in Baghdad. Across Iraq today, at least 85 people were killed in violence. Tomorrow, a regional conference will be held in Egypt to discuss the security situation in Iraq. Authorities in Iran have arrested that country's former nuclear negotiator, Hossein Mousavian. Officials are not releasing any details, but an Iranian news agency reports he could face espionage charges. Mousavian was an ally of the previous president, who was a rival of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And Turkey's prime minister asked parliament today to approve an earlier date for national elections. He asked for a June 24th election instead of the scheduled November 4th date. The prime minister is pressing for other changes as well that would give advantages to his Islamic party over Turkey's secular politicos. There are more high-level calls for Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert to resign after Monday's release of a highly critical review of how he handled the war against Hezbollah last summer. Israel's foreign minister is the latest top official to ask the prime minister to step down. Prime Minister Tony Blair, meanwhile, announced today he will be giving up his post in a few weeks. Blair told a crowd at a Labour Party rally on the 10th anniversary of his election. French voters go to the polls on Sunday in the runoff presidential election between Gaullist candidate Nicolas Sarkozy and socialist candidate Ségolène Royal. The U.S. Republican presidential candidates meet at the Reagan Library tomorrow for their first debate. Last Thursday, the Democrat candidates squared off in South Carolina. Police in Los Angeles will review their use of force after violence broke out at an immigration rally yesterday. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business.
We want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea, on California's beautiful central coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple keystrokes and you're visiting a beautiful website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, quiet, and the best shops, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that honest information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
The Food and Drug Administration wants to expand a warning for antidepressants for young adults ages 18 to 24. The FDA says there's an increased risk of suicidal behavior during the first month of taking antidepressants. The current warning now includes only children and adolescents. The National Interagency Fire Center predicts that drought and higher than usual temperatures may make for a severe fire season this year in the west and southeast. Police have arrested four JetBlue airline employees and a New York corrections officer for shopping sprees paid by credit cards accidentally left by passengers dashing to catch their flights. Fortune magazine reports that fired radio talk show host Don Imus plans to sue to recover the $40 million CBS radio still owes him on his contract. He has hired a top-notch First Amendment attorney. Imus was fired for racially offensive remarks he made about the women on the Rutgers basketball team. AAA reports since early April, gasoline prices have gone up 30 cents a gallon. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.68 a barrel. The Dow traded in record territory today. It closed at up 76 points at 13,211. And the NASDAQ was up 26 points. The S&P was up 10. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Coming up on 6 minutes after, I'm Bob. And an email rolled in. Sort of an observation, sort of a query. Namely, Warren Zevon's skills were at a peak when Granddaddy Evil, Old Ronnie, was seducing first California and then the nation.
So Warren's work was falling on too many right-facing ears. There is some of that. And you know, frankly, that takes us to another place. And it's kind of, you know, this isn't celebrity journalism. I wanted Crystal Zeevon on here because there is stuff within this book that is closely associated to the stuff we talk about here. You know why some of Warren Zevon's songs couldn't be played on AM or FM radio? Now, this is a journalistic use of the word, so don't blanch, Agnes, because they had the word shit in them.
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't say that on the air in America. Yeah, you know we got free speech.
Yeah, definitely free speech on Wednesday, slow on the driveway. You know, every now and then, you know, we get into this little thing that we get into from time to time, and we say, well, gee, do you think they're really going to be able to form a theocracy in the United States? Is it going to be, are the Taliban Christians going to take over? They already have! If you live in a country where certain words, because they're deemed to be dirty, dirty words, can't be said, you're living, sunshine, in a theocracy. If you live somewhere where you can't buy anything stronger than cooking sherry, like the dry county that I grew up in Alabama, you're living, sunshine, in a theocracy. You know, one of the things that I've frequently said in relation to the 9/11 issue is that as long as we're staring backwards at 9/11, we guarantee 10/10, 11/11, 12/12, 1/1, 2/2, 3/3, whatever comes next. Because we're so busy looking backwards, we're not looking forwards. Well, it's kind of the same thing, only different, with this business of, you know, the right-wing religion industry fanatics going to control America. Well, we're waiting for them to take control, and they already have. They already have. You know, sort of from the beginning of this show, we nominated the drive-by truckers as the as our patron band, or our unwitting house band. I don't know how Patterson and Cooley and the bunch would feel about it, but they are. We love them. Guess why they can't get played on radio? Oh, they say the brown word, and they say that German derivative word that begins with F that describes the sex act. Have any of you or your children or grandchildren or you as children ever been harmed by a word? Now, I tend to draw out and exclude the stuff that is said to be deliberately hateful. The N-word and all its various and disgusting connotations. Words for people who happen to have been born Jewish. Words for people who happen to have been born Arabic. Words for people who happen to have been born Vietnamese, Thai, Cambodian, Laos, Chinese, Japanese. All the beautiful panoply of racism that just coats this country like a coat of many colors. Those words I exclude. But have you ever been hurt by hearing the brown word spoken? The F word spoken? The GD word? No, of course not. There are times when it's downright funny. There are other times when it's gratuitous and uncalled for. But do you realize we live in a nation where if the Washington Post... Well, and so... No, wait. I was about to do a hypothetical. I don't have to do a hypothetical. How did the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune... No, stop with the listing, Bob. How did they all respond when Dear Leader got caught in an open mic showing what a foul mouth? See, I'm being a hypocrite now. How did they respond when Dear Leader got caught behind an open microphone using those objectionable words? Well, you know, even journalism couldn't print those words. Wow, little six-year-old Johnny may be reading the story about Dear Leader today and he'll see the brown word. And the F word. And then we won't get to sing the national anthem no more. And you see, that is what this is. That is what this is about. Because, you know, like Crystal said, Werewolves of London was written in 15 minutes. And then, boom, the biggest hit Warren ever had. It was not the best song he ever did, not by a long shot. But, you see, radio in this country, music radio, only plays stuff that's been focus grouped and tested, and little minions sit there and say, did you like it when it ended this way, or, you know, or did the minor chord bum you out when it ended on the minor chord, and did the character in the lyric need to die, or should the character in the lyric get married? They do this. They focus group. The mainstream country music is notorious for this stuff. And it's, of course, in mainstream so-called rock and roll. And this is not me being a fuddy-duddy. But radio stations couldn't and wouldn't program Warren Zevon's music and that of so many, many others because, you know, it doesn't fit the demographic. And I guess it is kind of hard to segue out of Britney Spears and into Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner. Isn't it? Yeah, probably. But that's not the artist's fault. You know, this is a country where artists wait tables and fit shoes on the feet of people, you know, doing the and do whatever jobs they can to get to keep on doing their art, because this country doesn't value art. You know, that old Latin phrase that appears under the banner of MGM, right where the lion's roaring, ars gratia artis, art for the sake of art. We don't value it. We're happy for people to labor. Although we do love the and Warren Zevon recognized this. It's obvious in the book. There's a segment where when he finishes The Wind, his last album, he says something to the effect of, "Well, now I have to hurry up and die before the Grammys get passed." And sure enough, Warren died, and it was just a Grammy fest for that album. And it wasn't, they didn't do it because he died, at least I hope not. They did it because it's a brilliant piece of work. So is Life Will Kill You. So is My Rides Here. So is The Envoy. But the fact of the matter is that as far back as one of my heroes, Mark Twain, and he writes a story where a bunch of starving artists put together a conspiracy to create the myth of this dying painter, and they start leeching little paintings. This takes place in France, but they leech little paintings out into the marketplace, and oh, he's sick, he's very sick, and the painting values just go up, 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 up. Meanwhile, back in the little studio apartment, they're painting for all they're worth, trying to create a body of work for this dying genius painter. And you know these, and you know that's fiction. The story of John Kennedy Toole, author of A Confederacy of Dunces, is not fiction. The man had a comic sense, the likes of which we haven't seen since Mark Twain. He authored A Confederacy of Dunces, shopped it. Ah, this is unpublishable. Ah, you know, no thanks. You know, this isn't what the market wants right now. He finally got disgusted with it, went home and blew his stinking brains out because he poured his soul into his art. And everybody went... Once he was a dead author with a tragic story, however, it became a national bestseller. Happens all the time. And we kind of like it that way. Not you, not me, not us. But our incredibly shallow culture that pulls its self-meaning out of its ability to sit back and go, well, it ain't me. Sunshine is going to be you someday. Right? Yeah. Let's go to the phones. David joins us from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I am. I'm fine. So what happens to be the topic of the day?
Well, we've been working through Crystal Zevon's book, I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, The Dirty Life and Times of Warren Zevon, the biography that just came out yesterday. And, you know, I mean, you've probably heard on hold there a little bit, just the general plight of art, artists, and culture in this country.
Well, you know, going to that, I guess you know the news of Joan Baez.
Yeah, Joan Baez, she's not American enough to sing for injured soldiers at Walter Reed.
She can't sing because of the fact of her anti-folk background. And now the Army and the military is saying, no, that's not it. There was a thing in her contract, and that's why she can't sing.
Yeah, never mind the fact that John Mellencamp invited her to join him, and they handled all the paperwork. They did it all. And the people at Walter Reed say, well, you know, no, we didn't have time, and that would force us to have to file form number XYZ17201-I-R, which we'd have to file in quintuple at 18 times. And, you know, they're simply in, and we haven't budgeted for that in the Iraq War resolution, and the Democrats hate the troops, and they won't let the, yeah.
Even John Mellencamp said, when he asked, they said, she doesn't fit in here, period. So there's your answer. She doesn't fit in here.
What does fit in there? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying. I know Mellencamp doesn't have the credibility of, say, Springsteen, or something like that when it comes to anti-war. But he's had his moments of protest.
Mellencamp lacking credibility? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, he's had his moments where he's made comments, social commentary. Just, I think maybe not as strong as Joan Baez, but still. I mean, who's measuring this? Who's weighing this?
Well, I know.
And that's what it comes down to. I don't think anyone's weighing it. I think it's all just strict. It's one of the most paranoid administrations. It's got the military paranoid now. And you see what they did with the blogs now, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I've got that on the list for tonight.
Oh, you got that on the list?
Yeah.
And then, speaking of censorship, someone cracked the code for the HD DVD key. I don't know if you heard about this.
No.
For Linux. So you could play it on Linux. And what happened is a lot
of... Okay, back up. I think you've just run about 6 light years ahead of me. Crack the code for which?
HD DVD encryption key.
Oh, okay.
So they could just play it on the Linux operating system.
Oh.
And it wasn't a big deal because they're going to change the code anyway. But what happened is people said, you can't. I mean, this deals with censorship again. I guess the whole theme tonight is really just censorship, if you think about it.
Yeah, it is. And we live in a country, David, where we've decided that there are benign forms of censorship and there are non-benign forms.
Right, and it's a theme of filtering, and it's a theme of diluting what you think is right. Like looking at the water, say, is this water clear enough? Is this water clear enough, Jake? Is this water clear enough? Is this water clear enough, Mary? No, it's not clear enough.
No.
And so what they tried to do was, I don't know what the DMC, what the digital rights copyright team is thinking, but what they try to do is they try to censor. That's going to work. Censor the internet. Don't say the code. So they got a lot of lawyers to email all these blogs yesterday. They were frantic over it. Like, you can't put the code out there. That's an illegal violation. So what ended up happening was they exploded. I mean, if you put the code, I'll send you the code, and you can put it in the Google search and see that. And see where it is. It's everywhere. It's on eBay.
Well, that's throwing the tide back from the sea a bucket at a time.
I know. It's on YouTube. YouTube has a
song. And that's the and David, that's the dynamic that's involved here, and it
right.
is a dynamic tension. The authors have rights, creators have rights, and they've got the right to the benefit of their labor. One of the lifelong travails of Mark Twain was the fact that he would no sooner get a book written and get the manuscript in the galleys to his publisher than what would happen in that day and age is copyright violators and pirates would have moles placed inside the company, and Twain would find that one of his new books had been published in Canada and England before it came out in the United States in the authorized edition.
I think the issue here mostly is the fact that when you say you can't put this up, and the fact that they think they own ownership over some numbers that someone found in the system, I think that's the bigger issue. And like I said, it doesn't really matter because they're going to change it anyway. The encryption key, it has to. The bigger issue is the same thing of like I'm trying to think of another example where this happened, but. It really has to do with the fact that if they were quiet on that issue, more and more companies and more people would have like dig.com, they put themselves on the line for something like that. It doesn't have to do with the issue of hacking or anything like that. It's more so the fact when someone says you can't do this, you can't. That's even more reason to speak out and just put whatever it is that people are telling you you can't put up. Put it on buttons. Put it on everything. That's the whole main thing about it. Because like I said, they're changing it now as we speak. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the nature of the process. Is that it's the dynamic tension between the lock pick and the lock maker. It's the build a better mousetrap kind of thing.
Well, the reason why that that happens so often is because these companies have such contempt, and they're so they're so petty when it comes to any hackers who test their material and say, oh yeah, this can't be hacked.
Well, do you remember this goes back to the electronic voting machine debate,
right?
Especially with the DREs. Oh no, you can't. And it was written into the daggum legislation in states all over this country, David, that the individual states could not examine the source code for the machine. Oh, that's proprietary information. And they screamed like the D-Bolds and the ES and S's and the Sequoias and so forth, screamed like stuck pigs.
It's the issue of controlling and filtering. It even goes to our side. Like, you heard what happened with the Obama's camp today, right?
No, what?
Obama had somebody working on their MySpace page, and this guy started like close to two years ago. And he's a paralegal from Washington, D.C. What happened is the consultants saw the page, and they saw that he had 160,000 friends. I think you know where I'm going with this now. And like, oh, that's great. That's great. You got 160,000 friends. Wow, how'd you do that? And then they got on the team. They said, okay, all right, we'll help you with the page. And all of a sudden, he found himself, you know, frantically working hour after hour. I think this is going to make you a little peeved, Bob. Hour after hour after hour, and they were like, And so eventually he was asking, well, I'm doing all this work and you guys aren't paying me? He's like, I don't know if that's really fair. And he's like, no, don't. He goes, you want to help somebody win a democracy back, right? And then what happened is that eventually they locked the guy out of his own. I mean, this is surreal world now.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
locked him out, and he said, well, if you guys do that, I'm taking my friends with me, which aren't real friends, but I think you know what I mean. It's
yeah.
all perception. So he took almost like 80 or 90% of his friends list with him, and then he left a post on, this was on CNN, by the way, about 2 hours ago, and he left a post up, and he said, you know, after dealing with this and just wanting to get a little compensation after working more than 12 hours a day on this site, because I've lost my energy to even want to vote for Obama. I think that's more revealing. These consultants, these losers, they couldn't even pay this guy money.
Well, no, because and you just, oh boy, have you opened up a door here.
Oh, dude. I know.
Because see, first of all, new media is something that people who walk around with peanut butter sandwiches in their back pocket and play hacky sack all the time do. Okay. It's not real media. It's new media, and it should be for free. Because, you know, what were the fundraising numbers? $24, $25 million that Hillary and Obama raised in a quarter?
Right.
Yeah, good for them. But, yeah, who's going to get that money? Well, the first person who's going to get that money is the consultant.
Mm.
Okay, the consultant, you know, and he consults and he advises the candidate as to where best to make his media buys. And, you know, don't say Iraq war, say Iraq conflict. And don't wear the blue suit with the red stripe.
Right.
Wear the gray suit with the blue stripe.
That's what they started doing to that guy, they said.
And it's a multi-million dollar industry.
Right.
And for the most part, where the Democrats are concerned, it's the same consultants recycled time and time and time again. And these guys are multi-millionaires in Washington, D.C. And
right.
You know what they're multimillionaires for doing? David, they're multimillionaires for losing. And then they turn around and the money that they don't skim off the top of all those campaign funds, you know, some of it goes into buttons, some goes into bumper stickers, some goes into maybe website design and maintenance and bandwidth and hosting and stuff. And then the rest of it goes to TV and radio stations in advertisements that'll run 6 weeks before in the last 6 weeks, last 4 weeks, last 2 weeks before the primary and do absolutely no good whatsoever.
And you know, the problem with that is that I think the reason why these people were trying to lock that guy out and they didn't pay him, obviously, they should have though, but they didn't pay him because they were afraid that a lot of these consultants, that they were going to lose their position, they were going to lose their status or whatever, because this guy was doing a lot more than what they were doing. And he was making a lot more groundwork on the internet where they were totally clueless on. And you know what's funny? I mean, I don't know why.
And I don't know how you get to be that clueless. I mean, Barack's a youngish guy,
right?
And you know, maybe that's my problem. Maybe that's our problem. Maybe we're too. No. There's no way I could ever be accused of being too savvy at the computer or too savvy at the internet. Jesus, these things own me. But the point is that. To one extent or another, there's a wide variety of experience, for instance, in this audience of
right.
people who pay attention to this niche of the pop culture or that niche of the popular culture or this part of the technological culture or that part. And yet, the best example is, what was it? It was the 1992 presidential election, and George H.W. Bush went into the grocery store and stared in slack-jawed, dumbfounded amazement at the barcode scanner.
You know, the Obama campaign, they lost big on this one. I mean, he took all his friends. He started up a new page. They're only left with, it looks really revealing now, they're only left with like 18,000. So it shows you how much his work, how many people he networked with and built this thing up from the ground up. And what do you get for that? You just lost a lot of momentum on that particular part of the web.
Yeah.
You idiot.
And you know, but again, that comes back to my thesis that they don't understand that this is vital yet. Now, I know that there's a lot of people on the progressive liberal side of things that say that, you know, social networking pages are the spawn of Satan, mark of the beast, they're evil, it's, you know, you're making money for so-and-so and yada, yada, yada. And you know what? It may all be true. But the fact of the matter is, it's how we are exchanging information, and it's how we are networking. It's how we are closing. It's how we're closing the gap in the enforced, bogus, dummied up, ginned up isolation that the right wing has foisted off on us for so many years. Does that make some sense?
I think of MySpace as putting flyers up in Uptown.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how I think of it.
Yeah, and I'm the kind of guy that stops and reads the kiosks.
Right. Exactly. And you know, a lot of these people, when Daily Coast came out, and they were supporting the grassroots and the progressive and all of that, I don't think people even realize what those guys did was they put like this, they had an informational hub center right there for all 50 states on a one site like that.
Yeah.
And CNN didn't realize it. They just said, well, it must have been those conservative Republicans who put them in. Or they so don't want to use the word progressive because none of them are tied to any of that money loop.
No. No. And so
if there's no money to be made, they're not going to say it.
And but I'm just now catching on to how important it is, David, because the music that we played, the beautiful, beautiful music that we played from Will Mearing a couple of nights ago,
right?
That occurred after I drilled down about four layers into a friends list off of MySpace page, off of my MySpace page. The same thing happened. The Crystal Zevon interview happened because of the same thing.
Hmm.
Because I get curious. I see, okay, well, that's my friend. Well, let's see who their friends are. Oh, look, that's interesting. Who are their friends? Who are their friends? And the next thing you know, you've got some beautiful music to play, or you're sitting there telling people about an amazing new book. And that's a process that has probably existed within the culture in other means. It's I've got you in my Rolodex and somebody else and somebody else, but it's seven layers of phone calls that might take a week to accomplish that I work through in 5 minutes. And it has amazing ramifications for those who will figure out how to use it. I'm so far behind the loop that I don't even have a theme or any of the bells and whistles for my MySpace page yet, because I haven't had time for the learning curve.
Well, I don't think you really need a theme for MySpace. I think
the wallpaper and the media players and all the bells and whistles.
Yeah. I think there's going to be something that comes along because MySpace gave in and they said, hey, the Murdochs came over and they said, hey, well, let me help you out here. I can help you guys out. And then they come in there, and then more and more there's going to be that issue of control, the same thing with the Obama campaign, the same thing with this administration, the same thing with the radio, everything. It all connects together like that, because it's all this people think they know what to filter out, and that's not how we have a democracy at all.
Well, it's not, and the thing is because of the media intensified nature of politics in America today.
Yeah.
Politicians are terrified of free speech. Any politician, left or right. Because, security and cowardice is the watchword of the day. From the moment that they declared that Richard Nixon lost the 1960 presidential debates because he looked worse on TV than John Kennedy, while the short-term effect was good, i.e. Kennedy was elected and not that freak Nixon, the long-term effect has been disastrous, because Abraham Lincoln could not get elected in the United States today. Oh, my God, have you seen the moles on his face? He's really, really tall and skinny. Has he got some sort of thyroid disorder? Why is he wearing that big, tall hat? Why is he bald? And, then Maureen Dowd at the New York Times starts writing stories poking fun at the baldness of Abraham Lincoln. And that's where it's taken us. And so they have to control media. They have to control message. They have to control speech, which means by definition that our speech ain't free.
One last thing.
Sorry, I don't mean to sermonize.
That's all right. One last thing. Did you listen to the Tom Hartman interview with the editor of World News Daily?
I have not gotten to that yet. No,
that was a good one. I mean, Tom wanted him to admit that he was a conservative.
Wouldn't do it.
Wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. He said, "No, I'm not a conservative." I said, "But have you taken money?" But I mean, Tom was savvy with it. Have you taken money from Richard Mullins Gates? He's like, "What?" He goes, "Excuse me, repeat that."
Have you taken money?
Richard Mullins. Then he goes, oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That guy.
I've taken a little. He goes, I've taken some money.
Yeah, oh, that billionaire.
Some money. I mean, I think they.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're in Robert De Niro land. A little bit.
They never hear this gay word. I mean, that's why they're always taken back when Tom brings that up. I mean, everyone's always surprised when somebody brings that up because, again, these people aren't being challenged, and that's all you need to do, people, to get them. That's all you need to do, challenge them. on something that they've never been challenged before. If it's not on the script, they're done for. That's where you get them.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, David, I appreciate the time, and I appreciate all... Man, you led me down the garden path again, and I enjoy it.
All right, man.
You take it easy.
All right, later, man.
Later.
Peace.
There is... You know, I don't know. Somehow I expected Barack to be a little bit hipper than that. But that's the thing. It's not a reflection of the hipness of the candidate. It's a reflection of the painful, paranoid nerdiness of the people who are running the campaign. You understand that these paid professional losers would never have let Bill Clinton play sax on the Arsenio Hall show? Oh, you won't have enough gravitas if you play the saxophone. And by the way, another email rolls in response to my business about dead artists. So if Britney Spears dies, does that mean she becomes the equal of P.J. Harvey, Emmylou Harris, and Maura O'Connell all rolled into one? Just curious. I don't know, but we're willing to try. We're willing to try, Brittany. We're willing to try. We'll come back after this break with more of your thoughts, more of your phone calls. 877-443-2366. 304-658-5453. You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 on Foxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary, and we'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. That's here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox, every Friday at 11 a.m. And for music and political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Minutes before the hour, and yeah, it's prayer meeting tonight, and we'll get around to some prayer meeting stuff, but back to the phones. Our good friend Alan calls in. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello. My senator from Alabama, Senator Baucus, he sent me a letter saying he was all for subsidizing small newspapers' postal subsidies.
Uh-huh.
And he said if there's some kind of legislation or something, he'd be for it. So what he's forgetting that it's already been passed by George Washington administration.
The First Amendment?
No, I think some kind of legislation was passed during his administration to help small newspapers.
Oh, wow. I'll have to research that.
That's what I heard.
Now which senator?
Senator Baucus from Alabama.
Oh, a state senator?
Yeah, he's a real conservative right-winger.
From Alabama. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because whenever I think of senator in Alabama, I have to either think of that turncoat Shelby or that just bizarre, weird, racist freak Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Sessions. That's what I meant to say, not Baucus, but Sessions.
Yeah, because Baucus is Montana or something, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a Baucus who's a representative from Alabama.
I see. Okay. Yeah, because there's nobody weirder than Jeff Sessions in the United States Senate. That one quote of his, I don't know if you've ever run across it, Alan, or not, but I can't hear his name without hearing his weird little voice saying it. It's a quote from him. You know, I used to think the Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked dope. He said that. Alabama has a senator who said that.
Oh shoot! It doesn't surprise me. He sent me a letter saying that he was not for a unionization because unionization will automatically take union dues out of people's paychecks. He doesn't say anything about how much more money that the union members have made.
Oh, I know. That's the thing with this very, very critical piece of legislation that's in the Congress right now, the Employee Free Choice Act. The standard right-wing talking point is, well, you know, it takes away a worker's right to a secret ballot in deciding whether to unionize. No, it doesn't. The card that he signs is a secret ballot. You know, they don't publish a list of who voted for and who voted against. It's if there's 50% plus one for the union, bang, you've got a union shop.
And that's democracy in the workplace.
Well, you know, I mean, it seems fair enough to me. But, of course, the right wing comes out, Alan, and they say, well, you know, if they know who was for it and who was against it, the people who were against it will be intimidated by the union knee breakers.
Uh-huh. And also, Jeff Sessions, I saw him in a movie about war profiteers,
mm-hmm.
and they showed an excerpt of him where he says, when they were talking about the waste of money by these big military contractors, Jeff Sessions says, we ought to talk about something else for a change. We ought to get to the real issues of the country, not...
Yeah, like big rocks in federal buildings.
Yeah.
Or Bibles for school children. Oh, God. Considering who it is, we should talk about something else for a change. Maybe we can go back to talking about Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that's probably what he'll want to do. Yeah.
If you know, Alan, is he up for re-election in 08?
No, I hope not. I sure vote against him, but you know.
Well, I was kind of hoping he was, because I'd like to see somebody get in there and challenge him. He hasn't had a viable challenger in Alabama since Franklin County's Roger Bedford, who had his own political problems with payola and kickbacks and stuff like that coming out of, Marion County, I think.
Same thing with Shelby. You know, Shelby, he got his start with the Democrat Party, and he switched over.
Yeah. That was when the Republicans took over the Congress in 94. He became a Republican faster than you can say Jack Spratt.
Yeah. I guess he was a Dixiecrat.
Mugwump, traitor, turncoat, Benedict Arnold. You know, I think they all apply, Alan.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were talking about artists earlier. I know that driving around the country in the truck, I never see any highways named after artists or poets or painters. They're all named after war people, and they're all named after, like, police officers, which that might be a good thing if they died and need to be memorialized.
Well, everything in West Virginia is named after Robert Byrd.
Yeah.
Over
I noticed that.
Yeah. We've got Byrd Federal Building, Byrd High School, Byrd the Byrd Highway, Byrd Drive, Byrd this, Byrd that, and I'm not gooning on the man too much, except for what he did to us with Samuel Alito, but that's interesting, and that's the kind of observation somebody in your line of work would be the most likely one to make and one of the only ones to make. But you're absolutely right. It's Well, you drive into our little hamlet here, and it's welcome to home of Sergeant so-and-so, decorated sergeant person.
And in Alabama, I've never seen a highway named after Helen Keller. Have you?
No. There's a hospital. There's an art. Maybe there's an art center or something. But no. Same thing over in across the river from Tuscumbia, over in Florence, W.C. Handy. There was a school there back during segregation, the Handy School, but I don't think they've gotten around to a Handy Drive or a Handy Highway.
Well, they need to.
Yeah, they do.
We got the Ronald Reagan Interstate.
Oh Lord, which one's that?
I-65 north of Birmingham.
When did they do that, Alan?
I don't know, but it makes me sick every time I see it.
It used to be to get from the Shoals to Birmingham, you had to get, and you still do, you got to go down 157. And I'm glad I haven't done that in a while, because the minute I saw Ronald Reagan Highway, I'd have to get off the road. I'd drive a dirt road to stay off the Ronald Reagan Interstate.
Yeah, with its falling banks as it meanders through the countryside.
Yeah, and for all I know, I get on the Ronald Reagan Highway, I wind up being diverted to El Salvador.
Yeah.
I'm glad you warned me about that. of course, I'm still profoundly offended by the idea that there's a USS Ronald Reagan.
No, I haven't heard about.
The USS Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier, nuclear aircraft carrier. Right along the U.S. side, the USS Harry Truman and the USS Abraham Lincoln, you get the USS Never Served in the Military.
Yeah, paid for by future generation taxpayers.
Yeah, and designed to sail over to places where brown people live and kill them.
Yeah, to steal their oil.
Yeah.
God, well, I appreciate amazing. You listening to me.
Alan, it's always a joy.
Right. Well, have a good day.
All right, you stay safe on the roads, all right?
All right.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Jeffrey Sessions. Oh my God. Go just read up on him. Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions was full. Let's keep it rolling. Go to our good buddy Luke calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey Luke, how you doing?
Good evening, Bob.
What's up?
Well, unfortunately us, but you know how that goes. But,
hey, no, I'm happy to be here. Hello, I'm Cleveland, sorry. You know.
You know, it's one of those things. Now, did you notice yesterday and all the nice stuff talking about all the people there were crying, the media were crying, oh, the Democrats just staged this, they held it so they could give it to him on the anniversary, and you're sitting there going, look, you all are the same people who 4 years ago knew they held the ship out of day so George could come make this presentation on the ship and not on the dock. Amazingly enough, George gets to fly out on a jet. Everybody else gets to come out on helicopters. See, we turned the boat so you can't see the skyline. And the only reason we know about this is because some of the print reporters tell us, you know. It's like all these people on TV, I've seen carpet about the Democrats. I'm sitting there going, yeah, let's see what you all said 4 years ago.
Well, you know, our buddies over at WD40.com also pointed out today that ABC News was reporting, and, you know, this is done just, you know, without comment, shamelessly by ABC News. President Bush's pen of choice for his veto of Congress's war supplemental bill, only the second veto of his administration, had great significance, the White House says. According to Deputy Press Secretary Tony Fratto, the pen was given to the president by Robert Durga, the father of USMC Reserve Corporal Dustin Durga, who was killed in Iraq.
I tell you what, if you ever really want to know, just go sometimes, take a look at the note, and then you probably should go over and take a look at the RNC talking points, and by golly, amazingly enough, they seem to cover most of them.
Yeah, anybody else, we'd accuse them of plagiarism.
I was going to say, so the only people who do any worse than that is the people at Fox. Of course, they get it directly, and they don't even bother changing anything.
But these people are so sleazy in the White House. Did you catch the other little gross thing?
Which one? There's so many.
Oh, yeah, true. You know, narrow it down, Bob. The business about the Lance Armstrong style bracelets.
No, I didn't hear this one.
Oh, sit down, Luke. According to ABC, the White House press office has handed out yellow cancer bracelets that say Tony Snow to support. They don't even say Live Strong. They say Tony Snow. You know, Tony could have had them buy a gross of Lance Armstrong's Live Strong bracelets and had it go to some kind of charity or something. But no, it says Tony Snow. Members of the press office said they would like for the press corps to wear these bracelets during Tony Snow's on-camera briefing Wednesday. I mean, do they all have to hold their hands up and show their bracelets? Is that how we find out?
Do they have tracking chips in them just so we know where they are?
It's enough to make you wonder, isn't it? You know, I guess, you know, they could have had the press corps all wear matching Tony Snow colostomy bags, but I guess the price was too much.
That's a good one. I like that one, yeah.
I got a million of them. I'll be here all week. Try the veal.
Well, like I say, as I was writing something today on it, and I said, yes. And that this whole thing, though, with the Abraham Lincoln brings me back to one of my favorite nicknames for the stupid guy. Commando Codpiece.
Oh, yeah, Agnes and I were saying something. I clicked over there, and bang, there's the picture on Bart Cop, and you know, Agnes started screaming, "My eyes, my eyes!"
You know, but it's what they say is that. Then turn around now. Here they're all talking up. Oh, we're gonna have this debate tomorrow night. It's like, what debate? I said the only person I'd really want to see if I wanted to turn into that. For any reason, it might be Ron Paul, because like I say he'll play the Gravel part.
Right,
Gravel
tonight. Mike Gravel will be the role of Mike Gravel will be played by Congressman Ron Paul.
And I got thinking the other day, and I said, "You of course know what part that is, don't you?" Hi there, welcome, Admiral Stockdale. Please come up here and sit down.
Oh, I'd almost forgotten about Admiral Stockdale.
I believe he passed away, didn't he?
Mercifully, I
think. He was a nice man. I felt sorry for him. You know what I mean?
You poor guy. What are you doing up there?
It's like he was a nice fellow. He just never should have been picked. You need the Ross Perot who's going to come in there and ask the question. No one will ask. You know, it's like yesterday. Last night you had with Congressman Kucinich. Somebody needs to ask the question, and everybody's afraid to, you know. The 500-pound gorilla sitting over in the corner. Everybody knows it's there. You know, somebody just has to say it. You know, it's like, say, I'm just waiting. My local right-winger, I didn't this morning, but I need to call him tomorrow morning and ask him, why does George Bush hate the troops?
It's got to be asked, and I don't know. We'll probably get into it in the next hour. There is a suggestion going around that makes perfectly good sense to me and something that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. When we first started talking about this so-called emergency appropriations bill, what's the emergency? Congress. Now, I listened during Mark Levine's show, Luke. I listened to Matt Rothschild's commentary from the Progressive, and he says that the Democrats in Congress are already watering down, you know, their bowels are already turning to chicken soup, and they're getting ready to craft a bill that has no teeth whatsoever and send it back to George, because that's what the president wants.
No.
No, they really are. And that's wholly unacceptable to me. Congress is under no... What? The onus
no
is not upon...
Or...
They're under no obligation...
Oh, yeah.
...to send George another bill. Huh? He said he wanted the bill. They sent him the bill. He vetoed the bill. End of bill. Now we'll move on to habeas corpus, or fixing the bankruptcy bill, or passing employees free choice. We got a lot of work to do here, George. Don't just screw with us. You asked us for the bill. We sent you the bill. You vetoed the bill. It's over.
So if you want a bill, fine, George. You come and listen to your suggestion, and we'll see if we want to take it up.
But, you know, we'll take it up when we get to it, because we're busy here.
So we gave you a bill. You said no. You denied the troops what they needed.
Your dirty, stinking, rotten Republican Congress screwed America from 1994 to the present. We got a lot of cleanup work to do, and we can't screw around with you playing political games. We sent you a bill. It was a reasonable bill. You vetoed the bill. Too damn bad, George. You made your bed, lie in it.
Okay. One thing quick before I forget, because I see we're getting up at the top of the hour. Have you seen this thing now that the, as I call him, the haircut that didn't make it, Glenn Beck?
It's oh yeah,
thing denied on the environment.
Yeah, what is it? Global scare. Global terror.
Climate exposed or something like that. It's like, oh, we're going to tell you the truth. It's like then you look down his list of guests. It's like amazingly enough, it's like the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Oh, by the way, that's a wholly owned subsidiary of Exxon.
Yeah, brought to you by Exxon. Brought to you by Exxon. Brought to you by Exxon. Brought to you by the Exxon Valdez. Brought to you by Exxon. Yeah.
Or British Petroleum or.
Yeah, because Glenn Beck, God knows, is smart enough to unravel the great big conspiracy theory that is global warming.
Well, like I said, was it him? Well, if it was him, and I'm sure we'll hear it from Bortz, too, because Bortz is like, well, this is how they're going to go after businesses. It's like, when the temperature reaches 125, and like I say, right now gas is about to crack three bucks down here. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Glenn, Neil, we're all after businesses. We'd actually like to breathe, but what the heck?
Yeah, we understand. You've got to make your stock split in time. Sure. Hey, Luke, thanks a million, man.
Alrighty,
take it easy.
Bye.
Bye now. I mean, is that not the response of a rational Congress? We sent you the bill. You don't get the bill. You don't get another bill. You had a chance. That's what you get. It's over. Or is this where we find out that we've been suckered and sapped and thrown a bone?
See, we did what the anti-war crowd wanted, but it wasn't... See, he vetoed it, and he'll call us liberals or something if we don't send him a bill, and we don't want to be called liberals, because that hurts your feelings.
We'll be back. Your phone calls are welcome. They always are. 877-443-2366. 877-443-2366. Or 304-658-5453. This is what conversation radio sounds like. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones hit another record today, closing over 13,200. Details coming up in our business segment. Congress failed to override President Bush's veto of the war spending bill today. The bill called for a timetable for troop withdrawal from Iraq. Democrats did not have the two-thirds majority needed for the override.
Today, a day after President Bush vetoed that war spending bill, he's meeting with a bipartisan group of congressional leaders to find common ground for a new bill. About 4,000 American troops will be deployed in Iraq this week as part of the troop surge. The aim of the increased troops is to help quell the sectarian violence raging in Baghdad. Across Iraq today, at least 85 people were killed in violence. Tomorrow, a regional conference will be held in Egypt to discuss the security situation there. Authorities in Iran have arrested that country's former nuclear negotiator. Officials are not releasing any details, but an Iranian news agency reports he could face espionage charges. He was an ally of the previous president, who was a rival of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Turkey's prime minister asked Parliament today to approve an earlier date for national elections. He's asked for a June 24th election instead of the scheduled November 4th date. The prime minister is pressing for changes as well that would give advantages to his Islamic party. Israel's foreign minister has joined other officials in the call for Prime Minister Ehud Olmert to resign after Monday's release of a highly critical review of how he handled the war against Hezbollah last summer. And Prime Minister Tony Blair announced today he will be giving up his post in a few weeks. Blair told a crowd at a labor rally on the 10th anniversary of his election. French voters go to the polls Sunday in the runoff presidential election between Gaullist candidate Nicolas Sarkozy and socialist candidate Ségolène Royal. In the U.S., Republican presidential candidates meet at the Reagan Library tomorrow for their first debate. Last Thursday, the Democratic candidates squared off in South Carolina. Police in Los Angeles will review their use of force after violence broke out at an immigration rally yesterday. Officers used rubber bullets and batons on the demonstrators. And it seems the Golden State might well be golden. 4 out of the top 10 richest counties in the U.S. are in California. This is Quality News Network.
Hi, I'm George Lopez. In comedy, there are some things you can count on to get a smile. In healthcare, Shriners Hospitals for Children have a proud tradition of bringing smiles to kids with orthopedic burn and spinal cord problems. The Shriners offer world-class medical care to children absolutely without charge. At all 22 Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized pediatric services for one purpose, to improve the lives of children. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
There was this man who almost learned to walk at a rehab center that almost got built by people who almost gave, almost gave. How good is almost giving? About as good as almost walking. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. Don't almost give. Give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
The Food and Drug Administration wants to expand a warning for antidepressants. Presently, labels warn of an increased risk of suicidal behavior in children and adolescents during the first months of treatment. The FDA now wants to include young adults ages 18 to 24. In Alabama today, a Union Pacific train carrying parts of the space shuttle solid rocket boosters derailed. The train was heading to Florida. 6 people were injured. Police have arrested 4 JetBlue airline employees and a New York corrections officer for allegedly illegal shopping sprees. They paid by credit cards. Those were credit cards that were accidentally left behind by passengers dashing to catch their flights. Fortune magazine reports that fired radio talk show host Don Imus plans to sue to recover the $40 million CBS Radio still owes him on his contract. He's hired an attorney. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.63 a barrel. The Dow Jones traded in record territory past the 13,250 mark today. The Dow closed up 76 points at 13,211. The NASDAQ closed up 26 points, and the S&P 500 closed up 10 points. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366.
All right. This one's flying by, too. Let's go straight to the phones and our good friend Teresa in Canada. Hey, Teresa, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, Bob. How are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you. You?
Oh, good. I was going to sound off on George Tenet.
Yes.
But I'm still reeling from your chat with Luke where you're talking about the sacred beetle pen.
Yeah.
And it was given to him by a soldier from...
A dead soldier's father, specifically to sign the veto with.
Like, am I the only one who sees the exquisite irony in that? He's vetoing funds for the troops with a...
With a dead soldier's pen, yes.
My God.
But see, Emery and Eileen out there, the White House thinks that they are immune to irony.
And I don't even see it. God.
It hurts, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And all of this, it's all over the news. Well, the Democrats failed to override his veto. The Democrats failed. The Democrats failed. The Democrats failed.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. They just... I mean, okay, the vote was what the vote was, but it wasn't a failure. We succeeded in passing a bill that gave the troops the funding that George Bush wanted, and he refused to sign it. He didn't support the troops. But that's not the talking point. That's not the frame. That's not the meme that's out there. I'm looking at a headline on CNN right now. No safe way for U.S. to leave Iraq, experts warn. Pulling U.S. forces from Iraq could trigger catastrophe, CNN analysts and other observers warn.
Bill Kristol or...
Well, but see, the thing is, if you take away the softball coverage of the news that they've had, they might actually have to go out and find some news. You know, be journalists. Work.
Did you notice, too, some of the stations aren't even calling it the funding bill? They're saying, like, Bush vetoed the troop withdrawal bill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Well, you know, if that's the case, then you go over to Fox, and it must be the surrender bill.
Yeah, exactly. But George Tenet, I don't know if you saw him on CNN.
Unfortunately.
Today.
No, not on CNN. I got all I could stand on CBS.
I know. But he had an interview with Wolf Blitzer, and...
that must have been a real Iron Cage death match.
Oh, it was actually Blitzer was I don't know, maybe he was trying to make up for his wimpy interview with Cheney. I don't know, but he was asking him some hard hitting questions. But just looking at Tenet, like he was nervous and you could tell he was getting very angry at some of the questions that Blitzer was asking him. He had paper in front of him, and his talons were sort of grabbing at it and everything. But he made one comment that would have made Rumsfeld proud.
Oh, yeah?
He said Blitzer was pressing him on, he's still trying to justify going to war, but not because of the weapon. So anyway, Tenet says something like, we have to act, quote, because what we don't know will catch us by surprise.
Oh, God, he's gone back to Rumsfeld's known knowns and unknown knowns, yeah. And garden gnomes.
I know. Just when he attacked Canada, maybe we have something surprising.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. And I have absolutely no sympathy for him. For Tenet,
yeah, you think we might have needed to know this maybe a couple of years ago, George?
Yeah, well, he just wants to make money on his book, and
sure. And like I said last night, the proof in the pudding is the fact that right-wing websites are out there hustling this book for all they are worth.
Mm-hmm. Right-wing websites?
Yeah, oh yeah. It's a dog and pony show, Teresa. This is whack-a-mole. This is wrestling. This is, the guy in the blue tights wins on Saturday. The guy in the red tights wins on Sunday.
But he just dodged everything that Wolf asked him. Well, the one thing, I'm not sure if Wolf Blitzer asked him this one, but during the attempt on getting Bin Laden at Tora Bora, Was that not a CIA operation?
Some of it was. A significant portion of it was.
And then, where they had them surrounded on three sides.
Yeah, and the side that he got out was the side that we sent the crack Afghani anti-Taliban forces to cover. Yeah, look the other way, everybody. Okay, we're not looking. You go now. You go now, Osama. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just been, when you were mentioning that book, Confederacy of Dunces.
Yes.
Read that. That is hilarious.
It's one of the most beautiful pieces, brilliant pieces of comic fiction and tragicomic fiction, really,
mm-hmm.
in the English lexicon in the last 50 years.
Yep. No, absolutely excellent book. But, I don't know, they're just showing their, I don't know, their sleazy side so much. It's like they don't care anymore.
Do they have another side?
I think
It's one big sleazy side.
Yeah. It's a Wolfowitz thing. He's not right now. Wolfowitz is all indignant. Stop the rush to judgment against me. Rush to judgment, like he's...
No. The war's 4 years old. We're not rushing to anything now.
Oh, no, he's talking about his girlfriend. Well, this is Wolfowitz.
Oh, no. I know. That's what I mean. You know, he hustled the war on us, and then, you know, the only job he could get that he did that didn't require Senate confirmation was president of the World Bank. Nah, nobody's rushing anything. You know, we've had plenty of time to see just how sleazy you are, Mr. Wolfowitz. Quit your crying.
But what I don't get, I guess the World Bank can't just get rid of them. I guess that you
suppose
that they have to.
No, they've got a procedure they have to go through. Personally, if I had my way, Teresa, I'd take him and his sleazy girlfriend, lock him up in a vault with $1,000,000 bills, and say, "Be happy."
Yeah.
If you want light, start burning money. If you want food, eat money. Mm-hmm. If you want a beverage, drink the money. But then again, I'm awfully fond of that final scene of Marathon Man where Laurence Olivier has to eat the diamonds.
Yes, yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good one. Anyway, that was basically...
Well, okay, it's always good hearing from you. You take care now, all right?
You too.
All right, bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, I mean, you want the proof in the pudding? I'm looking at a pitch here from Newsmuck. Special, get George Tenet's explosive new book free. Click here. Huh. How do you reckon Newsmuck got all those copies of George Tenet's book for free? I mean, they got millions and millions of readers who are going to want that, and all you got to make is a little donation to Newsmuck. But somebody had to pay for the books, didn't they? Well, tell you what. Just go and watch the New York Times review of books when it comes out, and it's going to have one of those little sword symbols by it, which means that the sales numbers have been artificially inflated by virtue of bulk sales. There's always a little sword by Ann Coulter's books, by Sean Hannity's books, by O'Reilly's books, by Limbaugh's books, by any right-wing book. And make no mistake, George Tenet's is a right-wing book, because this is wrestling. This is a con job. Pure and simple. Now, I want to, you know, we talked last night about sharing your thoughts and your urging to impeachment with your congressman. I'm going to share with you my effort, because I don't ask you to do stuff that I'm not willing to do myself. And frankly, if you're doing it because I asked you to on something like impeachment, you got the wrong guy, because you do impeachment because you love the country, because you're a patriot. But anyway, I fired off this letter to my congressman this morning. You and I both know the Iraq War is wrong. You knew it before George Bush and Dick Cheney started it in 2003. Because you knew it, you heroically acted to try to prevent it, and I continue to laud you for that profound display of courage in the face of the thuggery of the Bush administration and its legion of minions. Most recently, you have voted to try to bring an end to this heinous evil war. For that, I honor you. yesterday, 1 May, however, we learned that Dick Cheney and George Bush have no intention of letting this war come to an end. There is not a shred of doubt now that the basis for the war was simple. Lies. Those lies were largely promulgated on dummied-up intelligence fostered by Dick Cheney. Such lies, such machinations, are nothing if not high crimes and misdemeanors. This war, then, constitutes a full-scale assault on our most precious heritage, our Constitution. That self-same Constitution provides a mechanism for dealing with such an assault. It is called impeachment, sir, and only members of the House may initiate it. Thousands of American families have been shattered forever because a member has given what Abraham Lincoln called the last full measure of devotion. It is time, then, that you and your colleagues honor that devotion with devotion of your own. Can you spare a smidgen of political courage to honor the blood that has been cynically, heartlessly spilled in Iraq? It is time, Congressman, for you to sign on to Congressman Kucinich's bill of impeachment of Dick Cheney. Excuses such as Speaker Pelosi says we can't or it would take too long are not acceptable. Your oath to the Constitution requires it. This is your moment of destiny, and I know you have the patriotism and courage to give the right answer to the call. That answer is impeach. This is not a matter of political payback or political gotcha or some vendetta related to a stained blue dress. Left to their own devices, Dick Cheney will not move to end this war. He will let this war of lies and deceptions and utter mendacity continue indefinitely. What's more, he and Bush will take this war and move it nearer Iran. This may well be the single most grave, important, and heroic thing you have ever done in your storied legislative career, and I know that you have that heroism in you. For my part, Congressman, I promise you this. If you'll do the right thing, if you'll sign the bill of impeachment against Dick Cheney, I'll do everything in my power to support your decision. I will write letters in your support. I'll talk to neighbors. I'll shout down the weird 28%ers who, if they caught George Bush drowning babies, would swear it was a baptism. I'll tell my children that you're an example for their generation no less than the framers of the Constitution. Suffice to say, my family and I will continue to vote for you and urge others to do the same. I'll do all that for you, Congressman. For me, for us, for my children and grandchildren, will you please support the Constitution? It's more than a fair trade. To use a phrase that's been back in the political argo these days, this decision is a slam dunk. It's a no-brainer. You can either stand and be counted among patriots supporting impeachment, or you can remain seated as both history and the future call your name. Upon your decision will literally rest the lives of my children and grandchildren and thousands, nay, millions more across this republic. As Jesus Christ said, Congressman, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. Respectfully yours. Now, why did I do that? I did that because I have an ego. I mean, why did I just read it? I read it just now because I have an ego. Because the sad fact of the matter is, I have a doubt as to whether that will be read. I want to believe it will. I want to think that someone will give it, you know, the 2 or 3 minutes of reading time that took me, you know, what, 20, 30 minutes of putting it together and making it just so. I want to believe that. But I have no cause to. I hope it will. But I kind of wanted to let you know, like I said, I won't suggest you do anything that I'm not willing to do myself. So I did my part. I hope you'll do yours. Let's go to the phones. Peter's calling from Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Thank you. You know, Bob, I don't really have a whole lot tonight, but I came across something today that made me angry, and I just wanted to get it off my chest. It's from a blog called The Conservative Voice. They do various news and what have you, but
what really got to me was, you know, Congress is about to vote this week on a hate crimes bill.
Right.
Yeah, H.R. 1592. And this has huge ramifications. One of the ramifications is the what's going on in school districts all over the country. You know, I recently read an article where a gay kid who had been repeatedly insulted and taunted and beaten by students, and the teachers wouldn't do anything, the principal wouldn't do anything. Anyway, he snapped, and he walked into the principal's office and shot the principal dead with a gun. You know, rage is building up in people badly, and you know, this hate crimes legislation is very important. You know, we're living in such a cruel, mean-spirited country, and it, you know, it comes from the top. It comes directly from Bush and the lack of caring, you know, kinder, gentler mob donkey. But in any case, what annoys me so greatly about this article is the article is titled "Fake Anti-Gay Hate Crimes Keep Piling Up," and what they're talking about is this quote huge number of fake gay hate crimes. They start talking about the 72-year-old guy I mentioned a few weeks ago. This guy got off a bus. He was an elderly gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to help a fellow who was stranded in his wheelchair in a snowbank, and a guy was, you know, calling him a queer on the bus, and then got off the bus and murdered him, beat him in the head with a steel pipe. That his friend in the wheelchair witnessed it, and you know, they couldn't find the murder weapon, this, that, and the other, and the police are saying, you know, maybe it wasn't a hate crime. Well, anyway, that's being reported here as being a lie, and they're talking about the homosexual agenda and the homosexual this and the activists and blah, blah, blah. But that's not even the part that really got to me. The part that really got to me in this article was they go on to attack the Matthew Shepard incident. And they're,
you know, there's low and then there's low, Peter.
This is pretty low. There's several paragraphs devoted to it. I won't read it, but what they're basically saying is that the murder was not a hate crime, although it's still, you know, the homosexual lobby is widely claiming it, and the media and the homosexuals in the media, blah, 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 are claiming. But it was a failed burglary attempt. And there's no point in even trying to make sense of that. We all know what happened to Matthew Shepard without going into any detail. That's well documented. And I think we all know it wasn't a burglary gone bad. But, you know, I'm just trying to make heads to piece this together. You know, this is all part of the religious right thing, too, you know. By saying that they're not hate crimes, when you ask yourself what they're really saying that they are, I suppose what they're trying to say is that these are justified actions because the Bible is against it, or because God hates.
Or because they say the Bible is against it, sure.
Yo, there you go. There's that aspect, too.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Peter, and you know, there's nothing so right-wing and so horrifying that I can't make it worse. I've got an American Family Association action alert right here.
Oh, gee.
And in discussing the hate crimes bill, how is Donald Wildman and his wild children progeny and the weird little cult down there, how are they spinning this? Here's the headline, Peter. With regard to the hate crimes bill, new bill gives special preference to homosexuals.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
Wait for me. I mean, just kind of let it, you know, the syrup's got to get into the pancakes before it gets real. new bill would give special preference to homosexuals. The hate crimes bill, in other words, gives special preference to homosexuals because we would be taking note of the fact that they got murdered for being gay.
Oh,
now, that's some special preference in my book.
I see.
Sick bastards. I mean sick.
Yeah.
And they're also railing about something that is a good thing, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
Ah, yes, that ties into this, too.
And that bill basically says that you can't hire or fire somebody, or refuse to hire or fire somebody because you don't like how they have sex.
Yes, and it's directly connected to the whole idea of that to object to this kind of treatment of people happen to be American citizens is to somehow interfere with their religious freedom. Were they claiming that back when the whole thing about
you know, the blacks and slavery were the Baptists?
Yeah, they were.
Were they saying that basically that too, that it was interfering with the religious? I guess they were.
More than thousands of preachers across the South during the Civil War decried the Civil War as a Yankee invasion upon their religious rights to own slaves, because St. Paul admonishes and condones slavery.
Is that part about be kind to your slaves and be a good slave?
Be a good slave and you be a good slave owner, okay, and you all get to go to heaven together. There'll be a slave heaven in it.
Paul was kind of screwed up, wasn't he?
He was trying not to make waves. You see, Paul was writing at a time before Nero, before anybody got turned into a human Coleman lantern in the Vatican Gardens.
He was kind of like the middle of the road.
What he was trying to do was to say, here we are, we're peaceful, we're nice, see us, we're singing Kumbaya. Don't bother us. We're loyal to Rome. See, look at me. See, I'm writing letters here, and I'm telling people to honor the authority of the government, and that the governing authority is from God. See, we're not trouble.
Yeah, I see.
He was a bootlick.
Yeah, and if he had just stood his ground and said, he would have had to have condemned the whole slavery thing. That is exactly the opposite of what Christ wanted us to do.
Right, and bear in mind, he did this in less than a century after the Spartacus revolt, when Lucius Crassus had crucified some 5,000 rebellious slaves on the Appian Way, all the way from the boot heel of Italy to Rome, every 100 feet a crucified slave rebel.
Yeah, boy, those crusades were something, weren't they?
Yeah, I tell you what. But you're right. This is no different. This is no different than Southern bigots hollering about civil rights legislation being a violation of their religious liberty.
Yeah, and they're going on in this article, too, about the two guys, the two young guys that killed Matthew Shepard, about how they're doing, I think it's life in prison, about how they're martyrs and how they are unjustly being held.
That takes some nerve.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, that kind of thing needs to be taken into the pulpit of every right-wing church in the country. And just like in the little debate with the Democratic candidates, and just like tomorrow night, we need a show of hands. Everybody who agrees that the people who slaughtered Matthew Shepard are martyrs, raise your hand.
Yeah, that would really put it on the spot, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Okay. All of you with your hand raised, you're going to hell. Goodbye.
You know, and then you've got the vice president appearing on Rush Limbaugh, and who echoes the same sort of demented weirdness. The whole situation is so convoluted and just so plain evil. It's hard to wrap your head around it. And you know, I'm still convinced that what the right is doing is trying to use the gay community is I don't think they really hate us that much. I think they're using us as a test case just to see how far they can go. Now, you know, that's switching over to abortion rights now, because they did get away with this the rollback on we all know how that went down a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's all being used as test case. They want to see just how far they can push this to defend
They want to see how far they can push it toward making determinations as to who's a citizen, who's not a citizen. You know, we've learned recently that thanks to laws passed in the last 10, 15 years, however, by the Republican Congress, that you're not necessarily, just because you're born here doesn't mean you get to stay here. That's a law in this country now.
Yes, and we must be talking about brown children that are born when their parents cross the border.
Bingo. And the Republicans have such a nice little name for them. They call them anchor babies. You know, like they'd like to throw them to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. It's funny that they don't throw it too far away from the retail community. You know, anchor stores, that all kind of connect.
Yeah, it really does. You know, but they're not snowflakes, because snowflakes aren't brown.
Yeah.
Snowflakes are snow white.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a matter of trying to determine whose citizenship,
whose rights they can violate and get away with. From the AFA Action Alert, let's see, Republicans tried to expand the protected class in the bill to include senior citizens, pregnant women, prior victims, children under 18, the unborn, court witnesses, the military, and more. Democrats defeated all amendments protecting the welfare of homosexuals above other classes of citizens. Well, see, this is...
The mind boggles, doesn't it?
No, it does. I mean, I just
for a while back the ad, the attack ad against the AARP, and what it showed was a soldier in the left-hand picture and a couple of guys getting married in the right-hand picture, and the caption under the guys getting married was the real AARP agenda. When they were attacking the American Association of Retired People, they made it sound like they were pro-gay and not pro-soldier. It's funny how they stir this stuff up. They're really just evil people.
And they've got millions of tax-free dollars to do it with.
Oh, yeah, the artwork was really nice. You know, multicolor, you know, all, you know, it's it been a very nice print ad.
Yeah, it's not like they got it done at Walmart.
Oh, no, no, this is not copier machine stuff. This is the real deal.
Made on a Mac.
Yeah.
Sorry.
How long can these people continue to endorse the mediocrity? And it seems to me, you know, even what is the old joke about even a blind squirrel finds
even a blind hog finds an acorn now
yeah,
and then.
Right. So how can the left being so blind, even they've got to find an acorn?
No, because see, we got the poisoned dog food on our hog. Our hog's dead.
Oh no, not the Republican eating hog. The horn hog is dead. Jesus. We've got to take up a fundraiser. We have to have that hog. That's required.
Oh God. These people make me crazy.
They do, me too, Bob. And you know, like I say, I'm just kind of a, you know, one subject guy tonight. This is the only thing that really stirred me up, but you know, if I don't tell you, who the hell am I going to tell?
Well, that's only because I haven't kept you on here long enough, Peter. I got two or three here that'll have you dancing and screaming around the room and speaking in tongues before you know what hit you.
Oh, God. I've come to the well of all knowledge of evil. Scars of good and evil here.
Well, I was trying to convey that to Crystal Zivanya. I read this evil stuff all the time. And just to sit back and read, you know, something real and not just be there's unintentional evil and wrongdoing, and there's intentional evil, and I'm reading about all this intentional evil all the time.
Yeah, and it's always stirred up somehow with deflecting it. You know, look over here, here's the problem, and then somehow they paint that picture on top of what they're against, which is, you know, control of guns or keeping the money away from Halliburton. Somehow brown people and
oh, I got a right-wing religion industry headline right here, Peter. Bush-Cheney committed impeachable offenses, say liberal authors. How about Bush-Cheney committed impeachable offenses, say legal scholars?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that reminds me so much of the way newspapers covered child molestation cases in the 50s. If an adult man molested a little girl, there'd be a little article, you know, a couple of pages in this that, you know, a child molestation case, but if it happened to be a case where a man molested a little boy, it'd be the front page, you know, homosexual man molested, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I've been noticing that more and more, especially like in Associated Press, where the choices of words are so insidiously sarcastic. Just want to reach out and strangle.
Headline, PBS TV stations to air three-part documentary on atheism. Conservative Christians are criticizing a plan by public broadcasting service stations to begin showing later this week a three-part television documentary series on atheism, calling it demagogic and propagandistic. Pot meat kettle.
Pot meets kettle.
No, see, that's part I added.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. This series is about the disappearance of something, religious faith. And you know, oh, God, it's just...
Yeah, they're really everywhere. And you know, we've talked before about how, you know, for 40 years they've been doing these think tanks and how they would gradually take over the planet and implement all of these divisive changes in the way we think and they've done it, and they've done it. It's like a cancer, and the tendrils really extend throughout the body. there's just about no place you can turn. You know.
Hey, wait, but we got a little breakthrough going here, okay? Headline, and again, this is a Christian news website, all right?
Okay.
Headline, gun control bill seeks to close terror gap. Huh?
Yeah, that's...
Wait, it's a Ginsu commercial, Peter. There's more. A Second Amendment group says Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez should resign. Well, breath of fresh air. Right-wingers.
Right.
Wait, given his troubling support for a new gun control bill.
Oh, Jesus. So they're going
to... Yeah, Jesus wept. I know.
Yeah, they're going to go with the resign bit, but for an entirely... for a good reason.
Yeah, because the real reason, like him being a lion, torture, tolerating... No. He's a man of God.
Yeah.
It
gives them a way out. There's always a way out with those people.
Section 1237 would give the Attorney General, a presidential appointee, the authority to suspend or cancel someone's Second Amendment right, even if that person has never been charged with a crime, the Second Amendment Foundation warned. At the Justice Department's request, the bill was introduced last week by Senator Frank Lautenberg, D., New Jersey, whom the Second Amendment Foundation describes as one of the most extreme anti-gunners in Congress.
Anti-gunners, is it? Yeah.
Now, what's the, it's just a Christian news website. What's this doing on a Christian news website? Jesus says don't let him have the gun.
Yeah. We turned the ship around in the harbor in, over by San Diego, so it looks like Bush flew out into the ocean to meet the troops.
God, I wish he'd flown into the ocean. Oh, stop. What did I say?
Oh, and the kindest ship was
Yeah. Make a little water landing like his daddy did.
That's right. Of course, the mermaid saved him. Big butch mermaid.
See, you're doing promos again.
I'm sorry. I'm just drawn that way.
Oh, God. Yeah, Janice Krauss, director of the Beverly LaHaye Institute. LaHaye? Do we recognize that? For conservative group Concerned Women for America, told Cybercast News that, quote, airing the atheism program gives credibility and cohesiveness to individuals who seek to undermine the beliefs and values on which democracy and the American dream are founded. Really? Atheism's an attack on the Constitution? Oh, no, she's talking about the Bible.
Right. It's sad. You know, in this headline, fake anti-gay hate crimes keep piling up in huge bullfront. But couldn't every fake evangelical preachers keep piling up? You know, how many can you name just off the top of your head?
Don't get me started.
Exactly. You know, it's a scary planet. And you know, there are a lot of people reading this stuff. We heard from one of these people. God James had the honor of this kid calling in. I think it might. It was,
okay, this is the second time I've heard about some right-wing freak calling God.
Oh, it was something else. He calls in and he said a friend recommended Guy James' show to him, that he had listened to it for 2 or 3 days, and boy, had he had it. And he was an ex-Marine, mind you. Now, this kid sounded all of 16 or 18. I think that's a complete lie, but, you know, the lying is expected, you know, property, what people call it. You know, and all about how we should be ashamed, Guy should be ashamed of criticizing the government, and how, and so Guy asked him, so what have we done good in Iraq? You know, what is, you know, we got Saddam out, okay, we got Saddam out, you know, name something else. And it quickly degenerated from there. He's from, of course, he explained he's from a good Republican family, and that his mother and father had, you know, believed in Republican values, and that he was, you know, on the right path, and what a bad thing we're doing, And, oh, yes, he actually said that Sean Hannity was, quote, a genius. He actually said that.
Genius?
Yeah, that was about the point that got...
Well, okay, Sean Hannity may be a genius, like Wile E. Coyote was a genius.
Yeah.
Super yeah. Genius. I like that.
But those are the kind of people that are reading this, you know, what is the one, did I say it was from? The American Conservative?
Yeah.
What's the name?
Where are these freaks when I need them?
The conservative.
I haven't gotten to chew on a conservative in a long time.
I know you must be starving. You know, every once in a while we'll get one of the chat rooms.
Feed me, Seymour.
Yeah, but you don't get very many. I know you must be a hungry little liberal spider.
I am. You know, it's a little shop of horrors right here.
I love it. I wish one would call. I mean, they're just so not even wired into the same planet.
No, they're Mostly. Not. They're living on planet Zoob.
Yep.
With President Zorg.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he's a good man. He's a good man. He's a Christian man. Yeah, I mean, that's you know, you're taking me back to those awful places. The prayer for George Bush that the boys over at WD-40 found over at Free Republic. You know, I was emailing with Clyde, and they're not over it yet. I mean, you don't go over to Free Republic and stay there for very long, and you know, get over it anytime soon. I mean,
Bob, I looked at that site once.
Oh, I think there's going to be counseling involved.
Oh man, yeah, I had tremors for days after I went there. Pretty horrifying. <you know? laughs>
And oh, by the way, just in case you were wondering, Peter, the hate crimes bill.
Yeah.
These the right wing has suddenly found George Orwell's 1984. after the domestic spying scandal. After the domestic illegal wiretapping scandal, after the destruction of habeas corpus, after Abu Ghraib, after the FBI spying on vegans,
yes, and the Quakers, and taking over
the right wing has found 1984. In George Orwell's classic novel 1984, the government thought police constantly spies on citizens to make sure they're not thinking rebellious thoughts. Thought crimes are severely punished by Big Brother. 1984 was intended as a warning against totalitarian governments that enslave and control their citizens. Never have we needed this warning more urgently than now because America's thought police are knocking on your door!
Meaning us?
Last week, the House Judiciary Committee, egged on by radical homosexual groups...
Oh, no, not us again!
...passed what can only be called a thought crimes bill. It's called the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act, but this bill is not about hate. It's not even about crime. It's about outlawing peaceful speech. Speech that asserts that homosexual behavior is morally wrong.
Yeah. You know, there was a... I thought you may remember his name. His name was Leonard Matlevich. He was, I forget which war. I guess it might have been Vietnam. It's been quite a while ago. But anyway, his fairly famous quote, he said, I killed a man in battle and I got a Purple Heart, and I loved a man and got a dishonorable discharge, or words to that effect. I can't quote it correctly, but.
Well, yeah, and Crystal Zevon said it herself. Warren Zevon avoided the war by going in and saying, I am just so gay. And got a psychiatrist say, yep.
Yep.
Checked him out. He's on the gay agenda. He's gay. Okay. No war for you, boy.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, if somebody's going to take America down, you know, why not the gays, you know? I hate for the right wing to get all the credit of ruining the country.
I know, but how is America possibly going to be fall after it's been appropriately decorated?
I know. It would be such a shame. Imagine window treatments in every window.
I know. It's not sconces, for the love of God, sconces.
Oh, Lord, it's just a shame. I mean, you know, all this uproar about holding hands in public, it's just amazing.
I know. All right, Peter, so good to hear from you.
You too, and keep up the good work. Hang in there.
Love you, Peter.
Go.
I love you first.
Love you more.
You too. What am I going to do? Go read your copy of 1984. It's a gay book now.
Okay, got you. We're the evil ones. Got it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, don't forget. Later.
Okay, bye.
Mercy. Yep. After all that, they finally discovered 1984. Irony is lost on these people. It's just lost. All right, we'll come back and wrap it all up here in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to America's liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in the news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Before the hour, a few minutes left in the program this evening. Something I told our good buddy David in Maine earlier on that I had in the stack, I wanted to make sure I got to this evening. I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way, you know that. Headline, Army squeezes soldier blogs, maybe to death. The U.S. Army has ordered soldiers to stop posting their blogs or sending personal email messages without first clearing the content with a superior officer. The directive issued April 19th is the sharpest restriction on troops' online activities since the start of the Iraq War. We can't have the troops telling the truth about what a screwed-up, miserable mess it is over there in Georgia's little fairyland of blood. Military officials have been wrestling for years with how to handle troops who publish blogs. Hell, it goes back further than that. Hey, look, everybody, it's Literature Corner again. And we'll go back to the same book we went to last night, okay? Because this thing is just a treasure trove of military screwed-upness. Catch 22 by Joseph Heller. All the officer patients in the ward, talking about the hospital there on the island of Pianosa, you've got to be familiar with this book. If you've not read this book, go get this book. All the officer patients in the ward were forced to censor letters written by all the enlisted men patients who were kept in residence in wards of their own. It was a monotonous job, and Yossarian was disappointed to learn that the lives of enlisted men were only slightly more interesting than the lives of officers. After the first day, he had no curiosity at all. To break the monotony, he invented games. "Death to all modifiers," he declared one day, and out of every letter that passed through his hands went every adverb and every adjective. The next day, he made war on articles. He reached a much higher plane of creativity the following day, when he blacked out everything in the letters but A, an, and the. That erected more dynamic intralinear tensions, he felt, and in just about every case left a message far more universal. Soon he was prescribing parts of salutations and signatures and leaving the text untouched. One time he blacked out all but the salutation, "Dear Mary," from a letter, and at the bottom he wrote, "I yearn for you tragically, A.T. Tapman, Chaplain, U.S. Army." A.T. Tapman was the group chaplain's name. When he had exhausted all possibilities in the letters, he began attacking the names and addresses on the envelopes, obliterating whole homes and streets, annihilating entire metropolises with careless flicks of his wrist as though he were God. Catch-22 required that each censored letter bear the censoring officer's name. Most letters he didn't read at all. On those he didn't read at all, he wrote his own name. On those he did read, he wrote Washington Irving. When that grew monotonous, he wrote Irving Washington. What's the difference? Same stuff, different day. Wayne joins us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
What's happening, man?
Oh, did you hear my computer just...
Yeah, I did. You've got some killer speakers there, dude.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know a guy who told me to buy them.
Yeah, you know this guy who knows a guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're good speakers. It was good advice.
Okay, cool.
Good advice.
Yeah, good guy.
I don't know where to start.
The beginning?
The beginning is I'm extremely pissed off.
Not you. Not yes. Sweet little you.
I'm extremely pissed off at pretend Christians. And, you know, this is a personal thing. Maybe I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
You know, we have a supposed Christian that used to call this show and, you know, called you a demon and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but his name is Jim.
Okay.
And, you know, I want to know, you know, like, what, and I hope he's listening, and I bet he is, you know.
No, I get these emails all the time. I just don't
Yeah, well, listen, you know, I mean, this guy, you know, professes to be such a Christian and such a godly man and yada, 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 and... Let me ask you something. What is Head On Radio, Wayne Rebich or Bob Kincaid ever done to this man except try to make him a friend, try to include him, try to...
Yeah, we did all that.
Yeah, we did. You know, try to keep him out of his recluse existence and stuff like that. And this guy disagrees with us, so his goal is to try to ruin people, ruin what, you know, what we have tried to set up in the name and the honor of my wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that he's done, I know he's called my office in Charleston, and I know it's him, because he asked.
Your office has nothing to do with the network.
No, it does not. The ACT Foundation does not have anything to do with this network.
No.
And, you know, I know it's him because he asked for the chain of command. You know, so, you know, that's old military Christian. How unchristian could you possibly be than to try to ruin what people have tried to set up to try to honor people who believed in this and who have passed and, you know, I just came back from the Chamber of Commerce business thing, and, you know, the manager of the District Council of Carpenters in West Virginia, who is a very good friend of mine.
Yes.
And, you know, normally would never say anything, but asked me did I realize that I was getting complaints from Bob about Bob Kincaid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Has he got his knickers in a twist?
Exactly. You know, and, I mean, my God, man. And you have the nerve, the balls, to call yourself a Christian.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
And this is what you do. And, you know, maybe I don't believe in everything you believe in.
No, well, see, when you take these people, Wayne, and you hold the light up to their fantasies and their superstitions and their bigotries, they come apart and they lash out. I remember what happened to, children I've known when they first find out there's no Santa Claus. They get really hateful, and that's where this person is. It's just pathetic.
Well, it is pathetic, and it is pathetic, and we don't deserve that. We don't deserve that at all, and I certainly don't deserve it. My wife doesn't deserve it, and, this person is a despicable human being, and, you know, tell me what is Christian about anything he has done.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
But...
And, you know, he is, you know... He's no better than these people that pretend to be Christians that have started this war on false pretenses that promote, you know,
mm-hmm.
they care about people. You know, my ass.
Yeah.
And, it...
Well, you did explain to our friend over there at the district council that he was dealing with a nut job, right?
He won't talk to him.
Well, of course not. Who would?
He knows that. He knows that, you know. And believe me, that it will have absolutely no effect whatsoever.
No,
I mean, you know, well,
no, because the work we do from the right place and with the right spirit and in the right direction. You know, but you got to understand, Wayne, this is religious bigotry. See, I'd bet you've got some multi ancient great grandfather or grandmother somewhere along the way who, after they'd created the next generation, the church probably, we're all related to somebody that got killed by the church.
I
Do you realize that? They killed so many people across Europe, from the 11th to the 16th centuries, that every single human being alive of any kind of European ancestry, and God knows of Native American ancestry, is related to somebody that got murdered by Mother Church.
We're talking about crusades and stuff like that. Right?
No, we're talking about burning people. The Holy Roman Church burned people alive. They burned women alive as witches for suggesting that bathing might make you healthier. Okay?
Right.
If you were seen in the company of a black cat...
This guy would fit right in with those people.
Right, and that's what I'm trying to tell you. If he had his way 500 years ago, he'd come and set fire to your house.
Exactly. Exactly. And
mine, okay? I mean, I'm getting these emails. We've got a cyber stalker on our hands.
Well, you know.
If he could get out of his house, we'd have a real stalker.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't believe in the things this guy believes in, but I know he believes in hell. And that makes me want to really believe in it, because I hope that Christ, he burns in it forever.
Well said.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. It's highly frustrating. And see, this is the kind of thing that right wingers do. Ah, yeah, you got it. Well, this is the same. This is, look, dude, this is what got done to me in Beckley. This is what Big Coal did to me. This is what Appalachian Regional Hospital did to me.
Oh, hey.
Because all I did was speak the truth.
Talking about that, I had a conversation with the guy that fired you today.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
How are his festering boils doing?
Oh, well, he's very concerned about you and how you're doing and how intelligent you are and what a great guy. And
kiss my lily white
all
ass.
All that stuff, you know. I said, Jay, if you guys had any sense, you know, you'd run Bob's programs, because then, you know, I mean, you know, you could claim that you're fair and balanced. And, well, you know, I don't know if you listened to any of our programs. You know, we replaced Rush Limbaugh with...
Neil Bortz.
What the hell is his name?
Neil Bortz. Oh, my God. I'm going to have a hemorrhage.
I don't...
Yeah, because he's a liberal.
Yeah. He said, you know, I don't like Neil Bortz as much as I did Rush. And I said, why? Because Neil Bortz supports gay rights?
Jeez.
Which he does.
Oh, Lord.
You know, one of his...
Yeah, and every now and then Neil Bortz says worse things about the church than I ever have.
Right. And he said, well, I know you probably don't agree with that, but have you ever listened to Michael Savage? I said, I think Michael Savage should be in prison, Jay.
He's a moderate.
But anyway, he says to, you know, say hello to you.
Yeah, well, hey.
You know, he's concerned about how you're doing.
Yeah, hey to Goober.
Yeah, everything like that, you know. He's another one of those Christians.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, and I have nothing against him.
Oh, you know, what's that bumper sticker say, Dear Lord, save me from your followers?
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, these people give Christianity a bad name. I'm sorry.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. After 6 months of negotiations, Southern California supermarket workers with Vons, Albertsons, and Ralph's stores say they are tired of waiting. Since March 5th, the region's 65,000 supermarket employees have worked without a contract. Although they say they don't prefer it, they say they are willing to strike if they do not sign a new contract soon. Leilani Albano has more on the story.
After months at the negotiating table, grocery workers earlier this month threatened to walk out of labor talks for good. Michael Strader is president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 1442, in Santa Monica.
Clearly, enough time has elapsed for the parties to reach an agreement. However, the employers are playing hardball with the union negotiators.
But after a war of words, both parties are back to labor talks and announced last week they are edging closer to an agreement. In the meantime, the union is making preparations for a work stoppage, just in case. So far, they have collected 100,000 pounds of grocery for the workers' food fund and raised millions of dollars in strike money, says Chris Zazueta, a 20-year Ralph's worker.
I could only hope that the corporate CEOs have the common sense to come to the table with something that's fair and equitable for all employees.
For an extended version of that story, visit laborradio.org. Iraqi workers are protesting a proposed new oil law. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions is leading protests demanding that the Iraqi parliament reject the proposed new oil law. The union says the law surrenders Iraqi sovereignty to multinational oil companies. According to the union, under the proposed law, Iraq will lose control of its oil. The Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions says that will lead to social progress being curtailed. The Federation is calling for complete withdrawal of all foreign troops.